All right, we are good to go.
And it looks like we are good. So the April 22nd, 2021 meeting of the Arizona State Board for Private Postsecondary Education is called to order at 10:01 a.m. The board may go into executive session for the purpose of obtaining legal advice pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A3 on any matter on the agenda. The board reserves the right to change the order of the agenda items with exception of hearings. Mr. LaMountain, do you have any adjustments to the agenda you would like to make today?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right. Rachel, would you be kind enough to take the roll call of the board?
Yes, sir. Mr. Mike Romano?
Present.
Are you in attendance? Dr. Jennifer Leck?
Present.
Mr. Glenn Tharp?
Present.
Mr. Jesus? Are you in attendance, sir?
You cut out, Rachel.
Mr. Scott Wallace?
Here.
Mr. Doug Ball?
Present.
Mr. Kevin LaMountain?
Present.
Mr. Keith Blanchard?
He's having trouble. He's here around, so he's having trouble getting up.
No problem. And then Ms. Terry Stanfield?
Present.
Myself, Ms. Rachel Kearse, I'm in attendance. And then the Assistant Attorney General, Seamus Monahan?
Here. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you.
All right. Tremendous. Thank you, Rachel. All right. The audio recording of the January 28th, 2021 meeting. Ms. LaMountain, can you confirm that that has been posted and that it is audible?
Mr. Chair, I can confirm that it has been posted and is audible.
Tremendous. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
I second that.
Mr. Thorpe first. Mr. Wallace seconds. Wonderful. Rachel, would you take a roll?
And Mr. Mike Romano, your vote?
Yes. Aye.
Mr. Glenn Tharp?
Aye.
Mr. Doug Ball?
Aye.
Your vote, please. Dr. Jennifer Leck?
Aye.
And Mr. Scott Wallace?
Aye.
Beautiful. We have five A's. Motion has it.
Thank you very much. Look at us just rolling along. All right. So we'll now move to the executive director's report out. Mr. LaMountain.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. First of all, I'd like to introduce Mr. Doug Ball, who is a new board member for the Arizona Private Postsecondary. So welcome, Doug. Do you want to give us a little brief intro?
Sure. Graduated from ASU back in 1973. I'm a CPA here in Arizona, as some other states. And I've been a CPA for the last 45 years about. My wife and I have our own CPA practice where I specialize in the audit of private post-secondary schools, along with nonprofits and other small businesses.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Ball, for agreeing to be on the board. We appreciate it, and we're lucky to have you. And, you know, after your first round of going through all the documents that we provided you, hopefully you still want to stay on the board. the reading that you have to do. So, but we appreciate you being here. So just the executive director's report, just briefly, the update on the fiscal 21 budget, as you can see, the information that I put in there regarding our operations account that are currently our revenues are not matching our current level of expenditure. And that all has to do with the salary component, where we are in terms of some timing issues with some of the additional revenues that are coming in. So I do have a plan I put in place that we are going to reallocate some of the salary over into the 3027 fund, which is the Student Tuition Recovery Fund, which we are allowed to do based on the amount of work that certain individuals in our staff work with the Student Tuition Recovery Fund and those students that fall in that. So there's going to be some adjustments there. We also have a rent pushback that we will get, which is because we have rented out our space to the commission. So we're going to get additional money back provided back to us in April. But it still remains a concern. So I just want to keep it out there on the board's thoughts as we move forward. A lot of this has to do with, you know, again, we have not had any type of a fee increase for 25 plus years. And that is starting to catch up a bit with us. There are a number of the renewals that have a lesser dollar figure attached to them because they're smaller schools. So our revenue has declined a bit. So I just want to keep that out there. I'll certainly manage it. We have almost zero other additional expenses in terms of offices, supplies, anything else like that. So I think I've done a good job of making sure we all have, making sure that we're not spending additional resources that we don't have. So that's for that. The Student Tuition Recovery Fund budget, as you can see, we're currently at 284,532. We do have some expenses that are in there. We will probably have some expenses after today as we move forward with the Student Tuition Recovery Fund claims. I'm just going to move down. You've got the list of school closures that have happened since our last meeting in January, and then the number of schools. I think one of the encouraging things that we have in the hopper here is under initial applications of institutions that are considering coming into Arizona and starting a school, that we're up to 30 additional applications. Now, those are at stages from I think I want to have a school to they're really close to doing the submission for a new school application. But that's a relatively solid number. So we hope to see that continue to increase as we move forward. Education monitoring, you can see who's still on monitoring for HTM1. And then the big news that I think I shared with everyone. So both of the bills that we pushed through the legislature this year, both SB 1151, which was the one that did the replaced the SB 1279 from a couple of years ago with the where certain schools could come in and do online and not be licensed. So that has been passed and signed by the governor. And just as important, if not more important, is SB 1308. The strike bill was signed by Governor Ducey this week on the 16th and became law on the 16th. So that is now a lot of hard work from everybody, from so many people that helped with the sessions that we had with various schools, with Fred at the APSA, helping us push that through the legislature. But the good news to report is both of those are done. Both of those are signed by the governor, the one is law as of today. So, and I put all of the documentation and information about the bills in your folder. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Well, I certainly do want to commend the board staff as well, or the Arizona State Board private post-secondary staff for the work that you did in regards to moving that strife piece forward, as well as the partnership with the schools as well. I think it's textbooks collaboration that took place there to really land, and then the quick execution with that of the governor moving that through as well. So just thank you for all the hard work and finding common ground that helps, I believe, all schools and all students in Arizona. So thank you very much for that. Board, any other questions related to the executive report out?
No, Mr. Chairman, none for me.
All right, then we will advance into our next part of the agenda, which is the review of the strife claims. Just for clarification with the board as a whole, we do need to look at these individually. So as we pull these up, we will need to make a motion on each one individually here. So we will start with the first one with the claim for student JC. And Mr. Lamont, if you would like to make any comments on this particular claim.
I'll turn this over. Keith, did you make it on?
I did. Thank you. I apologize. I had to restart my computer because I couldn't hear you guys.
All right, Keith, you're up for JC.
Mr. Chair, members of the State Board, JC's claim is for $8,972. It's highlighted in green in the information that was submitted. It was a one-time payment on August 25th, 2020. That was the only thing that was submitted. The closure information is in the report. There is a surety bond of $303,648. The campus closed December 13th, 2020. If you have any questions in reference to this claim, please let us know.
Thank you, Ms. Blanchard. Any questions from the board?
I do, actually. One thing I just noticed on that when I was looking at it is that there was a claim in there that other institutions told the claimant that they should start over. And one thing I just wanted to note was that there was half of the grades actually on the transcript would not have ever been considered transfer grades. Generally, they were lower than what most institutions would note. So I just also wanted to note that that's probably one reason why the other institutions that they've talked to said that. Does it make sense?
All right. Would any board member like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion that we pay out of the Strive Fund $8,972 to student JC.
I'll second that.
All right. We have a first.
One PARP, sorry, for it was the initial.
And a second from Mr. Wallace. Any further discussion, board? Ms. Kuris, would you please take roll?
And your vote, Mr. Micromano?
Aye.
Mr. Tharp?
Aye.
Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Dr. Leck?
Aye.
And Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Eyes have it. The motion passes.
Excellent. We'll move on to claimant number two, student LR. Mr. Blanchard, would you be kind enough to give us a recap?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Claimant LR submitted their claim in reference to a refund. The information that's enclosed for your review included tuition for the New Mexico campus and then the tuition paid to the Arizona campus. Board staff separated these two so you can get a clear picture of where the funds were received. In green is the state of Arizona tuition and fees, which came to $2,550. If you have any questions in reference to the documentation, please ask board staff and we'll try to clarify.
Any questions from board members?
I actually do. The difference between this one and the last one was the length of time that they attended the institution and the grades earned to me. So this student isn't planning on using all of these earned grades and transferring?
Dr. Leck, we do have, I believe, a representative for whether it be the student or a parent of LR, if they wanted to clarify.
Okay.
So I do see it says claimant LR. So if you would, is there any statement that you'd like to make? Okay.
Are you referring to me?
We are claimant LR. So, and we do not use student names. So, but I do see that you are the one speaking as claimant LR. So Dr. Leck had a question in regards to your intent of using the courses you've already completed to continue your education elsewhere.
Yes, I would like to continue my education, but I would like to seek out a different institution than the two that SUBA reached a teach-out program with.
Okay.
Dr. Leck, do you have go a little deeper there?
But yeah, except the part that I'm like, I'm just going back to the rules, and I was, you know, thankfully you guys put the rules in there. That was so helpful to the board staff. So thank you so much. But it, and I don't know, maybe the difference is, you know, one of the things where I was talking about the validation of the claim is transferring to another institution. So if they're transferring, is it if they're transferring to another institution or if they transfer to another institution, doesn't that apply?
Dr. Leck, and Mr. Chair, Dr. Leck, if I may just provide some color to it. If the student utilizes, so if you were to grant the approval of this claim, the student, in this case LR, would not be eligible to utilize the credit that they earn in Tucson. Now, this is the individual who also used a tremendous number of credits gained in the Albuquerque school. Now, we don't have any control over that. So this would be for those credits that were earned in the state of Arizona for the one semester that he attended in Arizona. They would not be eligible to utilize those credits.
Well, to the best of my knowledge, SUVA, the Southwestern University of Visual Arts, is licensed through Arizona. They may have had a campus in New Mexico, but they were licensed through Arizona. It was actually a big concern last year, I believe in January or February, whether or not to renew the license.
And Mr. Chair and Dr. Luck and to the claimant, the institution is licensed in Arizona. It was also licensed in the state of New Mexico, which is where the majority of the school, the majority of the students' tuition was paid to, and the time that they had in the school was in Albuquerque. There was just one semester in the state of Arizona.
So those credits you would not be able to use any of your earned credits that came from 8/31/2020 term at Arizona to transfer. It's one or the other.
What if I do not want to further my education?
Then at that point, you would have, as Mr. Lamountain has shared, from the state of Arizona, you would have that eligibility of the $2,550.
So the remainder of my tuition, would that come from New Mexico?
Mr. Chair and claimant LR, you would have to apply through the state of New Mexico for any tuition recovery that may be eligible from that state. As I don't have the legal expertise in what goes on in the state of New Mexico, that would be something that you would have to confirm what their process is and if they have a fund that would be eligible to pay this particular claim. That's something that you'd have to follow up on.
I find this rather strange considering, as I mentioned before, that last year, 2020, it was around January or February, they had to fight. They had to seek legal help in order to keep the school open in Tucson, which if that school had closed, New Mexico would have closed. That is what they told us. I have documents that say such.
And this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. I just want to make sure that we're not discussing anything related to New Mexico law, the New Mexico situation. We are strictly dealing with what happened here in Arizona as it relates to the Strive Fund and the classes that were taken.
Clement LR, I think what you're hearing is, at least from the state of Arizona position, there is the credit piece from 8/31/2020 that if you accept and want to move forward with your Strive claim, you would not be able to leverage any credits from that time period based on the way the statute works. And if you wanted to pursue the additional mount, you would have to explore that with the state of New Mexico in this particular case. So I would, I guess, guide you as you think through the utilization of the credits that you earned since 8/31/2020. If you would like to utilize those for your continued education, or if you do not intend to utilize those, we can continue this out.
Okay. So you're saying, if I'm understanding you correctly, that if I don't want to use the credits I earned in the Tucson campus, I can be reimbursed for those. I can be reimbursed financially.
That is correct. Okay.
You realize he only had one semester left for the day. I am Brenda Roberts.
This is ridiculous for us. I'm sorry, if there is somebody speaking, we cannot audibly hear you, at least I cannot.
I am Luke's mother. I mean, Luke LR's mother. And we spent $68,000. We sold our home in Oklahoma. We moved all the way to New Mexico with good faith that he would be able to graduate in New Mexico. We moved him twice. We had to move him to New Mexico. Then we had to move him to Arizona. And we feel like we've just been really full. Like, we just don't feel like it's been fair to us at all, or him either. We're very frustrated. And the college in Arizona is underneath the is the main college. It was the main college. And we went to the school in New Mexico. I feel like that there should be some responsibility somewhere for all of this.
Mother of LR, we empathize with your situation here. We're controlled by the guidelines and the statutes that we have to live within, and thus why we've tried to educate that what we have control over is the credits that were earned in Arizona, which equate to, and the costs associated with some of the employer costs of that $2,550. That is what we have the ability to take action on. If the student would like us to continue that action, understanding that if we do, they would not be able to utilize the credits towards their continued education. They are still well within their rights within the state of New Mexico to explore other options that may be available for them for the tuition that was earned in New Mexico. I realize you may not agree with that. I'm sure we all have varying thoughts on that piece of it, but that is what the guidelines that we have to work within today as the board.
I understand that, but you would be angry too if you were in our shoes. Any of you would. So I just have to say that because I think it's ridiculous. All of it has been ridiculous for us. So we filed with the state of New Mexico. So it'll probably just take another year or two.
Claimant LR, if you would be kind enough to guide us, if you would like us to move forward or not.
I don't care.
I want my money back. That's what I would prefer.
Claimant LR, we can't hear you, so if you could get a little closer to the phone.
I want my tuition recovery. I do not intend on using these credits.
Okay, thank you, Claimant LR. With that, do I have a motion from any board member?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, before you make a motion, in the motion, would you also, the request was the refund check to go to LR's mother. So could that be part of the motion, please?
We can certainly do that.
Thank you, sir.
Indeed it can. Glenn Tharp makes a motion that we award from the Student Tuition Recovery Fund, $2,550 to LR's mother. And I guess I'd amend to say afterwards you'll have to share her legal name and stuff with the board staff so I can make that happen.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Tharp and Mr. Wallace. Ms. Kearse, would you please take roll?
Mr. Mike Romano, your vote?
Aye.
Mr. Glenn Tharp, your vote?
Aye.
Mr. Doug Ball, your vote? I'm going to ask
Mr. Ball, you are on mute.
Aye.
Thank you, sir. And Dr. Jennifer Leck, your vote?
Aye.
And Mr. Scott Wallace, your vote?
Aye.
The five ayes have it. The motion passes.
You're on mute, Mr. Romano, if you're
Yeah, it would help if I took us off mute. You gotta love the Zooms, right? Thank you very much, Ms. Kearse, for that. We will now move on to claimant LW. Mr. Blanchard, if you would give us a brief recap.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members of the State Board. The refund from LW is for $8,970, which is a one-time payment they made to the institution. I got to look at the date on August 25th, 2020. It's highlighted green in the information provided. This also, a refund was requested to go to LW's father, which is in the report. If you have any other questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Hi, this is Dr. Luck, and I apologize, but this one is the same situation, only I already transferred. So the rules say that it's not eligible. I'm just reading the rules.
So, Steph, could we get some clarity in regards to the fact that they have already leveraged the transferability of various credits and how that plays into it?
Mr. Blanchard?
Yeah, so in reviewing the claim, I saw that I'm under the impression that rather I didn't see any documentation or conversation with the claimant that they actually used those credits. They just went to a different school. So we'd have to have some type of verification, like a transcript from Coach East, that they've actually used those credits in the transfer. Just because she transfers to the school doesn't mean she's using those credits, because I know that can be a disconnect, but you'll have to get an explanation from them.
Excuse me, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. There's a lot of feedback. If we're not talking, can we mute ourselves?
I think, Dr. Leck, I think that's, most of that's coming from your – there you go.
Also, it appears claim, she said, that she had to start all over. LW had started all over it.
Correct.
The board could make a motion that to grant – the claim upon receipt of information that she is not using those credits, to your point, Dr. Lett.
Do we have the opportunity, is LW present on the call, that they could confirm one way or the other to advance this?
Is there anyone representing claimant LW?
They received an agenda.
Okay. I don't. I see a few numbers of telephone numbers that are logged in that don't have names, but I don't see anyone specific to that request.
I do see the and understand the conflicting information here, and I do think it's worth closing that part of the loop. to verify. I don't know if necessarily there needs to be a motion, but it sounds like from the assistant AG there does. So I guess I would advance a motion that the staff does go back to validate if credit has been taken for a portion of what the claimant has brought forward for strife relief.
So just for clarity, Mr. Chair and members of the board, just for clarity, is the motion then to push until we get additional information, or is the motion to pay pending staff review of the transcript at the community college?
I like your time savings effort there, Mr. LaMountain. And I am pro that approach, which would say the motion would be that we would refund $8,972 to LW's father, which the information is included in our packet, and based on the ability of the student to come back and demonstrate that they are not utilizing any of those credits to continue their education.
And can we make also just make sure they understand that they can't going forward? Because that's the part that I also don't know. You know what I mean? That they can't use it. Like, it's gone.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Mrs. Leck, the Department of has the same issues. Is to once the strike claim is paid, there's no way to monitor that. I think if we ask for the transcripts from maybe just ask for an affidavit that they're not using them. It may take a while to get transcripts. If I'm requesting transcripts from the community college, might be difficult. An affidavit to say they're not using them. But once we pay it and once they go, there's no way to really follow up with them whether they use them or not.
Yeah, Mr. Blanchard, we're comfortable with that. It can be provided by the student. We're just asking for that to be that point to be validated. And we understand the difficulties in post-monitoring of that, but to stay within the guidelines of the board and how we make the decisions, it seems appropriate that we would, again, support the motion would be to support the refund of $8,972 to LW's father post the validation from the student that that they are not utilizing those credits for their continued education, and with the understanding that they cannot in the future.
Very good, thank you.
Do I have a second to that motion?
Glenn Tharp, second.
Thank you. Any further discussion by the board? Ms. Kearse, if you would, take roll call.
Hey, Mr. Romano, your vote?
Aye.
Mr. Tharp, your vote?
Aye.
Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Aye.
Your vote? Thank you. And Mr. Wallace, your vote?
Aye.
That is five ayes. The motion passes.
Tremendous. Thank you for that. Just for clarity for all the member or all the people on the phone today, we want you to understand that the board staff has provided us with a plethora of information that we have the ability to review these. Although these have, we've moved through them relatively quickly, there is a lot of detail behind this information. I would hate for anyone visiting today to merely think that a statement was made and from that, we just move forward with approvals or denials from that. So just wanted to take a moment to educate our visitors on that particular part of the process. But with that, we can now move on from the strife claims onto the licensing piece of it. And so we will start with Penn Foster, which for change of ownership, which I am the lead on. And with that, Mr. LaMountain, would you, or Ms. Blanchard, I believe Mr. LaMountain, though, would you provide us with a recap?
Great, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, or members of the board. Before the board today is a change of ownership application for Penn Foster College. Penn Foster has been licensed by the state of Arizona since 1027 in 2005. They're accredited by DEAC. One change that I want to, and Mr. Chair, I sent you an email about it earlier. In the report that I provided to you is we have received this morning an updated gross tuition for the institution. That updated tuition is $918,954.46. That could, based upon the discussion that you have with board, change the potential surety bond, which is currently at $55,391. That would potentially change that based upon board decision to $91,895. With that, Mr. Chair, we have Ms. Rebecca McGovern, Ms. Heather McAllister, and Mr. Tom Wishart.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. LaMountain, can you restate the new dollar amount you kind of cut out on one of the digits?
Okay, sorry. Yes, sir. So the gross tuition, the updated gross tuition for Arizona is $918,954.46, and that would change the bond potentially to $91,895.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. LaMountain. Would the recognizing for the school's benefit that we have had a chance to review all of your information. So we normally will ask the school if they'd like to make any type of opening statement. Please do not feel the need to try and recap all the information that was provided, but reasonably whatever you feel comfortable with.
Thank you. Thank you. My name is Heather McAllister. I'm the General Counsel of Penn Foster, and we appreciate the opportunity to be here today. To your point, I think everything is laid out in the application. We're excited about this change in ownership, and we're here today basically to answer any questions you have regarding our application, and if there's any clarifications that we can make, we're happy to do that. But we appreciate your partnership and the time this morning.
Thank you very much. So I am the lead on this, so I'll start with just a couple questions. And one, I appreciate the time in preparing the application and information, as well as the staff's ability to comb through that, refine it, and really identify opportunities. A couple of things that I had, and I appreciate the school's transparency, I just wanted to validate that the matter between Ms. Betts and Penn Foster has been resolved consistent with how it was presented in the application. Can you confirm that?
I can confirm that, yes.
Thank you, appreciate that. There was a lot of information provided to us just in the review of the financials and the fact that there's no changes in really the org structure or how the school will operate as a result. We appreciate that clarity from that standpoint. I would just like to confirm that is still the case, that the school intends to operate as it has been consistently.
Confirmed.
Thank you very much. And although it is not normally our practice to dig into all the craziness of catalogs and EAs and that, as I was pouring through that information, I did notice on page 2 of the EA, the calculation policy under number 2, it mentions the retaining by the school within the cancellation period after the 3-day piece of it, that they would be retaining the admissions piece, shipping and handling fees as well, that are in excess of $335.
Yeah, let me refer to that real quick here on the application. And I don't think anything reaches the $350, but Rebecca, I don't know if you can clarify that.
Mr. Chair, you're on mute. I'm sorry.
Sorry about that. I believe you have a $200 admissions fee and then around a $65 shipping and handling fee and then a $75 lab fee, getting you to around that $335 number. I just wanted to validate that That is the case. I didn't know if that exceeded the threshold based on what a school can retain, but I wasn't sure if you were actually retaining that full amount.
I have to look into that unless Tom or Rebecca can answer that question and revert back.
Mr. Wishart, if you are speaking, you're on mute.
Sorry about that. Heather, I believe that we retained a shipping fee, but the remainder would be refundable if they cancel within the cancellation period.
Board staff, can you confirm, is there, I believe there's a limit, I thought it was $200 on what a school could retain if a student cancels before starting?
That's for a non-accredited institution.
Non-accredited, yeah.
Thank you. So in this particular case, if they were retaining $335, they are within their rights and meeting that expectation?
That's correct.
Thank you very much. As I mentioned, I just wanted to confirm that piece of it. All right. With that, okay, I really
thank you for the questions. I'm glad that Mr. Wishart could jump in. I think Rebecca was trying to talk, but she didn't. She was on mute, so apologies for the technical glitch there. But if there's anything else on that, please let me know.
Absolutely. As I mentioned, the application was very thorough. Appreciate all the information there. I'll see if any of the other board members have any other questions related to this change of ownership.
I did not. I also thought it was a clean application, so thank you for that.
I have no questions. That's Scott Wallace.
All right. Given that I am not hearing any questions from the other board members, I will make a motion at this point with the updated information that Mr. LaMountain has provided us. So I would like to approve the change of ownership application with a maintaining of a surety bond at a new amount of $91,895. That is my motion. Do I have a second on that?
Glenn Tharp, second.
All right. And before we proceed, does the institution, Penn Foster, agree with that stipulation of the surety bond amount?
We do.
Very good. Any further discussion by the board? Very good. Ms. Kurtz, if you would, take roll call.
Of course. Mr. Mike Romano, your vote?
Aye.
Mr. Glenn Tharp?
Aye.
Mr. Doug Ball?
Aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck?
Aye.
And Mr. Scott Wallace?
Aye.
That's five ayes, and the motion passes.
Congratulations, Penn Foster, on the change of ownership. We appreciate your time and the preparation you took in the materials. Have a wonderful rest of the day.
Thank you. We appreciate the partnership. Have a nice day. Take care.
All right. We will now move on to change of ownership with Wizard Medical Training. And I have drawn the lucky card on this one again to be the lead for it. So we'll keep rocking and rolling forward. Mr. LaMountain, would you be kind enough to provide us with an update?
Certainly. Mr. Chair, members of the board, Wizard Medical Education has been licensed by the state of Arizona since 2/23/2017. They are currently accredited by ABHES. Before you today are two matters in front of the board, which is number one, the change of ownership, and number two is the actual renewal of the application for the regular degree granting license. In front of you today, representing the institution, as you can see on the screen, is Mr. Andrew Johnston, Mr. Dennis O'Neill, and Ms. Beth Whitman. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. LaMountain. Would the school like to make an opening statement?
Yes, this is Andrew Johnston. I just want to thank everybody for their time today and look forward to answering any questions you have regarding.
I apologize, Mr. Johnston. If everybody could mute, thank you.
Absolutely. I was just saying I look forward to just answering any questions today regarding both the change of ownership and the license renewal for the programs.
Very good. Thank you for keeping it brief. We appreciate that. Again, I realize the scale of this particular change of ownership is slightly different than that of the first one that we had, but still want to recognize the materials and how they were presented. Very clean from that standpoint. So I don't really have too many questions on this. It's fairly straightforward. But playing off of the earlier school, I did notice as well on the EA cancellation, as well as page 9 of the catalog, that there really isn't any call out for what happens after the 3-day grace period of cancellation and when a student actually starts school. Now, it does look from your marketing materials as though you don't have any type of application fee or admissions fee or anything of that nature, and that may be why it is not included in the cancellation policy. But I did want to validate that was actually the case, that you are not taking in any funds that should otherwise be considered refundable to the students. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's exactly correct. We don't have a separate application or enrollment fee.
Okay. If you were to change that at some point, you would need to go back and update your records accordingly to be within the statutes.
Understood.
Okay. All right. And obviously the board and the staff is here to help in support and provide clarification on that in the materials. So that's part of the benefit of the partnership with the state board and the schools themselves. So please make sure to leverage the staff in its entirety, including Mr. Lamont and Mr. Blanchard, as I know they're always looking for things to do. So, all right. I also noticed on page 11 of your catalog that the address for the state board, I believe, is out of date. I wanted to confirm with the staff if that's an acceptable address or not on page 11 of the catalog. And I apologize, I should have written down the one, but it is not the West Adams address.
Is it the 1400 address?
Yes, it is.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So that will have to change.
I know we've had that updated a couple times with Wizards, so I'm surprised you missed that. Thank you for the catch.
Well, I wouldn't credit me too much. My eyes were kind of crossed at that point of reading the information, and that's why it stood out to me. So thank you, though. I appreciate it. Again, you know, we're here to help. We want to make sure we're providing good information to the school and obviously in that particular case to the students as well, so that they're getting a hold of the right parties and we can minimize some of the frustrations, as we heard earlier in the call, that sometimes students and families can experience.
Absolutely.
With that, that's all I had from my side of this change of ownership. Board members, any other questions for clarity?
I guess just from my standpoint, as I think I'm not a financials expert, and thank God I have two accountants on the phone that can read into that. But just on a high level, it appears that you're profitable now, because I know we were just a little bit profitable.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, we've kind of got our feet back under us after the last year and a half.
How are you finding recruiting at this point in time with the COVID environment still? You get plenty of interest? Or?
It's actually increased. The bulk majority of our students get referred to us over from the fire departments directly, and the fire departments are certainly fielding the need right now. So we've been seeing those enrollments increase.
Okay, very good. That's good news for you guys. That's all, Mr. Chairman, from me.
Thank you, Mr. Thorpe. Not hearing any other questions from the board, I will go ahead and make a motion that, let's just verify I have the right one here, that we approve the change of ownership of that of the institution. And I'm looking at my records here, sorry, of Wizard Medical Training. And that they sustain a surety bond in the amount of $29,454, as well as continue quarterly reporting.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace. Mr. Johnston, are you agreeable to those stipulations?
Yes, we are.
Very good. Board, any further discussion? Ms. Kearse, if you would, take roll call.
Perfect. Mr. Mike Romano, your vote.
Aye.
Mr. Glenn Tharp.
Aye.
Mr. Doug Ball.
Aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck.
Aye.
And Mr. Scott Wallace.
Aye.
That's five ayes. The motion passes.
Mr. Chair, I have a real quick question. I'm sorry, I just noticed. Is it wizard medical training or is it wizard medical education?
It's education, I believe.
Okay. So I will amend with the simple clarification of wizard medical education. Sorry. Does that require a revote?
Yes, I would. Good catch, Dr. Lee.
Sorry.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Assistant Attorney General. Let's replay this one. We'll rewind and might as well start from the top on that one. So I am making a motion that we approve the change of ownership for Wizard Medical Education, sustainment of the surety bond of $29,454, and continuation of the quarterly reporting. Do I have a second on?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace. Mr. Johnston, do you agree to that?
Yes, we do.
All right. And any further discussion from the board? Dr. Leck, this would be your time to interject.
I tried, but I couldn't get off mute the first time. Sorry. I'm so sorry.
That is okay. All right. Would you be kind enough to take the roll again for this vote?
Yes, I will, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mike Romano, your vote.
Aye.
And Mr. Glenn Tharp.
Aye.
Mr. Doug Ball.
Aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck.
Aye.
Thank you. And Mr. Scott Wallace.
Aye.
Again, five ayes. The motion passes.
Fantastic. Thank you, Mr. Johnston, for your time today. We wish you the best of luck. Have a wonderful
Mr. Chair, yes. I'm sorry to interject, but there's two items on this. So we're approving this change of ownership, which has been done. There is also approving the regular degree granting license renewal.
Ah, very good. Thank you for that call out. I think that's what threw me off before. I thought it was somebody had copied and pasted, and I felt like that was an error on that side. So no problem whatsoever. So we will make a motion that we approve Wizard Medical Education for their regular degree granting license.
Glenn Tharp, second.
Good. Any discussion by the board? All right. Ms. Kearse, would you please take a roll on that motion?
Of course. Mr. Mike Romano, your vote.
Aye.
Mr. Glenn Tharp.
Aye.
Mr. Doug Ball.
Aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck.
Aye.
And Mr. Scott Wallace.
Aye.
Ayes have it. The motion passes.
Very good. Mr. Lamont, can you just confirm that we have addressed all activities on Wizard Medical Education?
I can confirm that we have done that and everything is good.
Thank you very much. We appreciate everybody's patience here. If you didn't like it the first time around, we'll probably repeat a couple of these throughout the day. So thank you very much. With that concludes that portion of the agenda of change of ownership. We will now move forward into the renewal of applications by stipulated agreement, which includes UTI MMI, with the lead being Mr. Tharp. And as Chair Mike Romano, I will recuse myself from this proceeding.
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. Could you just make a brief statement as to why you are recusing, please?
Yes, I'm recusing based on the fact that I am employed by Universal Technical Institute and MMI.
Mr. Chair, is there somebody that's going to be the stand-in chair while you're recused, or do we not need that, Seamus?
Mr. Tharp, you are the lucky winner of standing in to be that individual.
I shouldn't have said anything. I thought Mr. Wallace raised his hand, but perhaps he didn't.
He raised both, but I love you so much, Glenn. We're going to go with you.
Thank you, Mr. Romano. Okay. Mr. LaMountain?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Tharp, and members of the committee, before the board today, this is a discussion and action on the 2021 license renewal, regular degree granting license for both Universal Technical Institute and Motorcycle Mechanic Institute. So the reports that you have, there are two reports, one for UTI, one for MMI. The information provided is in there regarding the stipulations. And just for a point of clarification, the proposed action at the end is still a board determination of whether the surety bond is maintained at $3,757,900 or based upon the new gross tuition revenue that we've received would be the $4,342,435. So representing the both the institutions of UTI and MMI is Mr. Troy Anderson, who's the CFO, and Mr. Barry Holland. Mr. Tharp.
Thank you, Mr. LaMountain. Just before we get started, Assistant AG Seamus Monahan, can you, would these require two separate motions since they're the same company but two separate schools being licensed? I assume they would.
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. Thank you for the question. Because of the way they're listed in the agenda separately, I would just do it separately.
Thank you. Okay, do we have representatives from the school on?
Yes, you have Troy Anderson here.
Mr. Anderson, how are you this fine morning?
I'm doing well, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. This one was a little challenging for me because there's just so much data to call out and to try to call out what's applicable to Arizona and what's applicable to the plethora of other states you operate in was a little difficult, but I would thank you right off of the top. I mean, it's clear you guys are a quality company and those, you know, the catalogs and everything seem to be in perfect compliance that I see. So thank you for that. Just curious how the school is doing financially and fiscally. I have the stuff, but what are you seeing in terms of enrollments and the fiscal picture for the school?
Yeah, I had some prepared remarks. I can just answer.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Launch into those if you would like.
Yeah, I realize there is a lot there. My remarks are more geared toward the entity overall, but I think they are applicable, to the Arizona entities as well. I'll run through it as quickly here, but there's a lot to unpack in there, as you said, and a lot has happened since I was here last year. When I sat here last year, we were about 1 month into the COVID shutdown. And, frankly, we were still trying to figure out what was going to happen and what the impacts would be to our students, to us, et cetera. When you look at our full year numbers for fiscal 2020, again, at the total company level, it was a 2% decline in our average full-time enrollment. Our student starts decreased 2.4% on a year-over-year basis. And that excludes our Norwood campus, which we did successfully close, Norwood, Massachusetts. Which we did successfully close in July of 2020, despite the pandemic, and that had been a long-planned action. Our revenues were down about 9% for the year at $300 million. But for comparison, at the mid-year mark through March of 31 of last year, our average students were up slightly. Our student starts were up 7% on a year-over-year basis, and our revenues were up 3%. And keeping in mind, March, we did start seeing some of the effects of COVID in March. So you could see that in the back half of the year, we had a much different performance level that brought down the full year numbers than we did in the first half of the year. As a result of the pandemic, about 3,000 students took a leave of absence. So roughly 30% of our students took a leave of absence there at the end of March through April and into May as our campuses were suspended operations due to the pandemic. We immediately pivoted to a blended learning model so that we could continue offering education to our students, allowing them the flexibility, to continue, or as about 30% of them took LOA. The blended learning model combines instructor-facilitated online teaching and demonstrations with hands-on labs, our campus labs, when we were allowed to reopen, were redesigned to meet the health and safety standards designated by CDC, and also our accreditation and curriculum requirements. We continue to offer blended learning across our campuses and programs today and are completing the process for permanent approvals. We did continue to see throughout the year higher LOAs, retakes, withdrawal rates, which extended program lengths for our students throughout, you know, all of last year and into the first part of this calendar year. We've implemented numerous programs, made significant investments to improve student outcomes, to support them, you know, through this change in delivery model and through the COVID pandemic. We're excited about the improvements we're seeing. We expect to continue seeing improvements and really get back to pre-COVID levels as we get further into this year, or the fiscal year and the calendar year. Frankly, many of our campuses are already operating at pre-COVID levels as we see here today, and we're continuing to work with the others to get them there. Net income-wise, we were profitable last for the fiscal year. We generated $8 million in net income versus a loss in the prior year. That did, though, include a $10.7 million tax benefit from the CARES Act. We did manage costs judiciously throughout the year in light of the significant revenue shortfall we experienced, but while still focusing on supporting the students and delivering a quality education. We're very solid from a balance sheet perspective. We ended the fiscal year with approximately $115 million in cash and short-term investments. And subsequent to that, in December, we did purchase our Avondale, Arizona campus with cash on hand for approximately $45 million. And reported $72 million as of the end of the quarter ended December 31. We did also have CARES funds in the fiscal year. And again, there's disclosures around that. Just in brief, it was about $33 million, of which about $23 million was directly delivered to students in terms of cash, emergency cash grants and laptop PC program that we implemented. And the remaining funds were used to offset allowable expenses as determined by, you know, expenses we incurred as a result of COVID, as determined by the Department of Education. For the first quarter, and to your question, you know, we've seen very strong demand. Our student starts, and this is the first quarter ended December 31, 2020. Student starts grew 21% year over year, and that's against a pre-COVID comparable period in first quarter of 2020. And our average students were up about 2%. However, due to those same factors, we do still continue to see pressure on our revenues, and they were down 12.7% on a year-over-year basis. We did generate net income in the quarter. Our guidance for the fiscal 2021, so ended September 30, upcoming 2021, which we reiterated on our last earnings call, beginning of February, is revenue and student start growth of 10 to 15%. Versus fiscal 2020 and net income of 14 to 19 million. So we're expecting a strong year, requires measurable improvement as we continue to get into the back half of the year and in the front end strength that we're seeing, continue to see from our leading indicators, as well as the improvements that we're making in the student outcomes. And in closing, I'll just make a few quick comments. Despite the impacts of the pandemic, we have demonstrated significant momentum in executing our business priorities and growth and diversification strategy here in fiscal 2021. We've announced a number of initiatives. I mentioned the Avondale campus purchase. The importance of that is that we're consolidating our Phoenix MMI campus into the Avondale location, getting much better space utilization between those two campuses, and now bringing a full suite of programs into the Avondale site. We're following a similar path, although more through lease, not purchase, of consolidating and reconfiguring our UTI and MMI Orlando campus facilities. They're two separate facilities a mile or so apart. We're bringing them onto one site. We've expanded our welding program. We did expand to two additional campuses in fiscal 20 despite the pandemic. We've already expanded to one additional program here in 21. We're adding Bloomfield later here in 21. And we've already planning for two more locations in 22. We also recently announced two additional campus locations that we'll plan to launch in fiscal 22. We've named the location of one, which is Austin, Texas, and we expect to name the second one here very shortly. And these campuses will be different than our prior campus launches in that they will be fully optimized around our blended learning format, and we'll also have capacity for additional programs as we further pursue our growth and diversification strategies. And most recently, we announced a definitive agreement to acquire MIAT College of Technology. They serve about 1,200 students through two campuses, one in Canton, Michigan, and the other in Houston, Texas. They offer vocational and technical certificates, as well as associate degrees in fields with growing and strong demand, energy technology, aviation maintenance, wind power, robotics and automation, non-destructive testing, HVAC. They also have welding. So in addition to adding two campuses to our network, we will also be able to now broadly diversify those program offerings into the UTI campus footprint. We do expect that transaction to close the second half of calendar 21. And we're continuing to pursue other strategic opportunities, be it organic or inorganic, while focusing on the outcomes for our students and broadening the offerings to our students, and of course, increasing returns for our shareholders. So appreciate the opportunity today. Apologize for running a little long there. Again, I know there's a lot to unpack in the materials, and I thought I'd try and bring some of what I thought were some of the key items.
Yeah, that very much
consideration.
Very much helped me because, although not a ton of questions I have, one of them was around the 10K plus tax benefit. And so I see that's part of the CARES Act that
yes.
I'll bet that this year. So that's good. When do you think the MMI UTI merge will happen? I mean, not merge, but merge in the same building.
That's going to be probably summer of 22.
Okay.
And we are going to leave them as separate OPEIDs, in the same facility.
Sure. Yeah, I understand that. That's not fine. So went through the catalog, and it as voluminous as it is, it looked good to me. The grievance procedure was good, check. The refund policy was good, check. The admissions requirements were good. So I don't really have any questions on that. I do have just one question on the enrollment agreement. And this is more probably for staff, Mr. LaMountain. The holder in due cause, due course, is defined. I'm used to seeing a standard language, and theirs is different on their enrollment agreement. But I assume you reviewed that, and that still meets the standard?
It does.
It does. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Blanchard. Yeah, because it's just not the one I was used to seeing. It's not that standard language that's generally in there. So we do that. So those were really my only questions. And again, thanks for going through that, because I had like four or five that you answered with your your intro. So
good. Great.
I would then just ask my fellow board members if they have any questions or concerns, and specifically Mr. Walsh or Mr. Ball, if you see anything fiscally you'd like to call out or question.
Looks good to me.
Okay.
I see steady improvement and good equity, and so I'm okay with the financial information as presented.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate that.
I have some questions.
Yes, Dr. Mack.
First, I went through your catalog, and I'm just curious. So you have a policy for non-matriculating students where they can attend. And then it says if you decide to later enroll, then you have to meet the requirements for admission with a high school diploma or GED. My question is there a stopping point? Because it doesn't say like you can do it for how long. How long can you do that before you have to transition? Could you go through the whole program as a non-matriculated student?
Barry, do you have any comments on that?
Hi, this is Barry Holland. Unfortunately, I do not. I can absolutely follow up with the right party and get that information for you. I've not had too much hands-on experience with that particular policy.
Okay. I'm just interested. I know, like, in my experience, we limit it. Otherwise, they could potentially just go. I don't know why they would want
Dr. Lackdale, since he's recused and he's a member of the school, is it appropriate to ask Mr. Romano if he can answer that question?
I'm more than happy to, if I have the ability, Assistant AG.
Maybe Mike can slip me a sheet of paper under the table and I can answer it. Go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
This is Monahan. Yes, if Mr. Romano is speaking as a representative of the school and not the board, but then yes, he could speak on this.
Okay. So I'd ask Mr. Romano that you state your name for the record as a member of the school, please. And then you
Michael Romano with the Universal Technical Institute.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Leck, for clarification of your question, are you asking if a student can start with us without proof of meeting the admission requirements and matriculate through?
Yeah, it says in your it's in your non-matriculating students policy in the catalog, if I can, maybe I can find it real quick, where it just says that you can, I swear it says you can not have to meet those if you're not matriculating into a program. But then if you choose to matriculate later, you'd have to demonstrate that, but there's no time limit. So I was just curious how long they could do that for.
Okay.
Oh, here it is. It says, for those students who cannot enroll in a full-approved program and are therefore ineligible for FA and a degree diploma from the accredited program, proof of high school graduation is not required. If a student chooses later to enroll in the full program, all admission requirements listed above must be satisfied. So I just didn't know if there was a marked place where that has to happen.
Yeah, so for clarity and how we will work with different organizations and companies, we do have the ability to offer companies, once we establish an agreement, that student, that their technicians can take certain courses within our program. But then if they convert over through the traditional application process, they would be required to meet all those admission requirements. If I had to guess, and we could certainly do follow-up, it is probably a requirement that we call that out based on ACCSC standards because of the programs that we provide. But for students going through the whole program, nobody has the ability to go through our entire program. They do have the ability to take some courses a la carte.
Got it. Okay. I only had two other questions. One is, so I noticed, and this is more I'm learning, I noticed you guys use credits for your classes, but when they... But there, what is the end? It's not an associate. You don't award associate, like you don't award anything at the end, do you, that the credits are used for? So it's would be the same almost as clock hours versus credits?
Yeah. Do you have that one?
I mean, so we do list both semester credit hours and clock hours within our catalog.
Yeah.
And then we do offer degree programs, if that's what you're speaking to.
Oh, I don't see. Oh, I didn't see anything that said associates. That's what I was looking for. See.
Yes. So generally, even with diploma programs, Dr. Leck, this is Glenn Tharp, they still have credits assigned.
With credits? Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. And then my last question is, obviously, with it being vocational, it has a lot of hands-on aspects. So when you're doing hybrid, how are you dealing with that? Are you trying to do like all of the didactic online? Like did you, for COVID especially, you did all the didactic online for a long time and then the students had to come back and finish off the labs and the hands-on stuff later. So they might not have, right? You couldn't have done those at the same time necessarily, correct?
Correct. What we did was we went through each of the programs. We assessed the didactic versus the hands-on. We converted all the didactic into an online curriculum. While our campuses were operations were suspended, students were progressing through the curriculum on the same cycle that they would, but only on the didactic portion. When we reopened the campuses, we brought them back and had a makeup process for the lab component, ideally while keeping them progressing in the didactic. So ultimately they got back on track. Most students, frankly, just took makeup labs or stayed online for an extended period, even though the campus was open, which is why we had some of the financial impacts that we did. It elongated many students through their program. And where we operate today, all new students coming in were coming in concurrently with the didactic and the hands-on labs. The hands-on labs obviously being, you know, CDC compliant, you know, socially distanced masks, et cetera. And then, you know, and where we are operating, continue to operate today is is in that model where there's student is in a three-week session, they're doing the didactic on their own time, and they're in the building only for the lab component. So they're in the building for less time. We do, most of our campuses, we have them in 5 days a week because we found that from an engagement model perspective, that is much more effective. But they're in there for a shorter period of time, and then they can do the didactic component on their time. But we're having to make sure they do it because now they're not in the classroom with us constantly, you know, having them monitoring their progress, et cetera. It's just a different model. That's part of what we've been working through with our initiatives is to keep them engaged, keep them progressing through the curriculum in, you know, this different structured model. And we're seeing a lot of good progress on that.
So how do you transcript that then? Are they getting like an I grade for that course if they can't finish the lab part at the same time they finish the didactic? Like, how does, you know what I mean? Like, if they're tied together in the same class, how are you running one didactic part and then having to come back and do the follow-up for the clinical part, if you will?
Yeah, well, it's they're scheduled in our course rotations are 3 weeks. So every 3 weeks, a student is scheduled for a course rotation. They are required to do and complete in that 3 weeks all the lab component and all the didactic component. And they won't be able to be very successful in the lab component if they're not doing the didactic along with it. So normally they would be in a class, you know, historically, you know, pre-COVID, they would be sitting in a classroom one day, they'd be in the lab the next day, or they'd be in the classroom half the day and in the lab the half the day, or maybe in a lab the full day, but it would all be worked concurrently. Now they have to be diligent about doing the didactic component in parallel to the lab component. The instructors are, you know, obviously doing instructions with the lab, you know, demonstrations, et cetera. So there's still an element, if you will, of didactic because they have to speak to them and show them what to do. But they need to be progressing through that. And that's one of the requirements to pass the course is to complete a certain percentage of the didactic component and demonstrate the proficiency in the lab to adequately, you know, earn the credits for the curriculum and move on to the next.
Okay, that's all my questions.
Thank you, Dr. Lett. Anybody else have any questions? Okay, hearing none, I'm prepared to make a motion that we... Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Member Tharp, I apologize. This is Seamus Monaghan, Assistant Attorney General. I misspoke before. I just went back and looked at the stipulated agreement, and both you two and I are on the same stipulated. So you can do them together, please.
Thank you. I was going to ask again, just because the way the surety bond works, it's going to seem like I'm requiring one that much for each school. So it's all done as one.
Can we discuss the surety bond perhaps before the motion? I was curious about the amount. It was a fairly significant increase, yet our revenues were 25% lower. Are you assigning a higher percentage rate now?
I am. Based on your the total calculation, the revenue was $43,000 between the two schools, $424,352, and then 10% of that would, for the surety bond, would be per our statute, would be $4,342,435.
Mr. Anderson, the calculation is based on the gross tuition revenue of each of the institutions that are located in Arizona. So it's not the overall corporate. It is based on the 10% of those two numbers that you provided.
So last year it was $57 million and it dropped to $43, but our bond is going up. That's when...
Your bond is going up based upon the numbers that you provided for gross tuition for MMI and UTI. When you combine the two of those numbers together, that then is the appropriate.
Okay. We can follow up on that. Perhaps there was a different approach.
Perhaps. Okay. So I'd like to make a motion that we approve the license renewal for MMI and UTI with the following stipulations: that the stipulated agreement remains in full force and effect, which has the surety bond maintenance and the electronic records, and that the surety bond increased to $4,342 and four, I mean $4,342,435.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Do we have any further discussion? Hearing none, before we take the vote, I would ask Mr. Anderson if you agree to those stipulations.
Yes, and thank you all for your time today. Right.
Ms. Kearse, would you take us through the vote, please?
Yes. Mr. Glenn Tharp?
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Doug Wall?
Aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck?
Aye.
And Mr. Scott Wallace?
Aye.
All right, the four ayes have it, with Mr. Romano being abstained from the vote, and the motion passes.
Okay, that will do that. Thank you. I now gladly pass the gavel back to our esteemed chairman, Mr. Romano.
Okay, thank you all. Bye-bye.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Thur. Appreciate that. All right, well, let's continue on in the agenda. And we have renewal application for conditional to provisional with the Justice College and Dr. Leck as the lead.
Thank you very much. Would anyone from Justice College like to make an opening statement?
Yes. Can you hear me fine?
Yes.
Okay. So my name is Dr. Palmer Chinchin. I got to meet most of you last year when you granted our conditional license. And if I could open with just a brief update with what has happened in the last year. The first thing I would say is that we have made meaningful and active progress toward our accreditation. Last May, our team attended TRACS. TRACS is our accrediting body. We attended their orientation seminar over Zoom. We've also, over the last year, compiled and submitted all 17 of their required institutional eligibility requirements, IERs, and those include things like the faculty handbook, financial policies handbook, strategic plan, five-year financial plan, assessment plan, and things like that. Dr. Cannon, who's the vice president of TRACS, has sent your staff a letter verifying that we are making active and meaningful progress toward accreditation. The second thing I wanted to mention is last year, your chair rightfully was concerned that when we're starting the college, we only had $600 in the bank. And that was a valid concern. And I'm pleased to say today, I feel like we have established financial stability. Today, we have $126,000 in liquid cash reserves in the bank. We are also have built, I think, a really good administrative team or attending the meeting today. I have our CAO, our academic dean, Nate Hughes. I have our compliance officer, Dr. Charles Seeley, our admissions counselor, Rosa Gonzalez. We also have a CFO, and we have three program chairs. And so what we're in the process of doing now is we're actively recruiting students and receiving applications for our first class of freshmen this fall in September 2021. Our goal had been to open in fall of 2020, but because of COVID and the shutdown and the inability to meet in person, we postponed that to this coming fall. And our goal is to have between 20 and 50 students attending. And the last thing I would mention, if I could, is it's been exciting. We just acquired our campus. It has been 30 acres, and we just acquired 6 more acres with 5 homes on them that will serve as our student dorms for those who want to live on campus. So if any of you are ever in the East Valley, by the way, I brought a picture. Can I show you real quick? Because this is exciting. We just closed 10 days ago. It's a 6-acre parcel right in the middle of our campus that was owned by a family. And the whole family was ready to move, and they asked us if we wanted. So let me show you this real quick.
This is new.
Can you see this from there? I don't know if you can, but this is our campus here, and the 6 acres with the houses is right in the middle. I'll end with that.
Well, thank you. That is definitely a new experience, I think, for most of us that we have visuals. We don't usually get visuals, so okay. Appreciate that. I can understand and see that you're very excited about that. And funny, through your intro, you did answer one of my first questions was, I couldn't see where you had any students. So that has been answered.
Okay.
So I do have a whole litany of questions. You'll have to forgive me. As you can probably have seen, I'm probably the detailed person who asks lots of weird things. The first one is, when I'm looking at your tracks history, you had submitted revised documents on February 15th of 2021 to tracks based on their feedback. What was the gist of the feedback? So one of the things that I'm interested in is the progression through tracks seems like it's prolonged, right? So like 1 year at this stage, 1 year at that. So what was it that has made it for you not to be able to get to the applicant stage yet so far? What guidance are they giving you?
So one of their requirements is to have multiple audits. So we had unofficially asked Dr. Cannon, the vice president of tracks, to review the IERs we had prepared in the fall. I think you see we submitted those to him in November, and he gave us feedback, and it was rather minor. We were waiting for a year-end audit from 2020 before we could submit the submittal. So that was it was just a financial hurdle we needed to cross. Our school is only 2 years old, so we gave them 2 years of audits.
Okay, and not to pry, certainly not to pry, but when you were making your earlier statement about having 600 and now 126, it sounds like you have a lot of staff where 126 might not last very long. Where's the income coming from if you don't have students? Donations?
So we have a good stream of healthy donations. I think I mentioned last year, I'm also the pastor of the Grove Church. We have about 3,000 to 4,000 weekly attendees. So they have been donating over the past year. So we have a good stream of healthy donations at about $10,000 a month coming in.
Okay. All right. And I'll leave the rest of the financial questions to my fellow board members who are much more schooled in that stuff than I am. But so if we can go to your enrollment agreement, you have the cancellation and refund policy. I was curious, if the student wasn't accepted, you would also give back the $100 fee that you charge them for applying, or would you not?
So we would, and this was the enrollment agreement you approved last year, but since then, and maybe we need to update it, Dr. Legg, because we're no longer asking for an application fee.
Oh, yep. Then that's in
can
there.
Can we update that after this?
Okay, so I'll leave that to board staff.
Okay.
And then this was just a placement thing that I noticed it, and it's going to be in your EA as well as your catalog. But when you look at the refund, cancellation and refund policy, right, it says that statement that if you're not accepted, the applicant's entitled to a refund of all monies paid. That's why I just wanted to clarify whether you were keeping the registration or not. Then it hits the 3-day cancellation notice, and then it goes into the refund policy. It just kind of seems weird. Like if you're reading it, you would normally read like, here's the entire refund policy and then the 3-day cancellation and then the holder of due course. It just seemed like it was inserted in the middle of it, strangely. So I just want to make that note.
Okay. So I did work with Mr. Keith Blanchard last year on that. And to his advice is how it's been entered, but I'd be glad to work with him some more to revise it and make it flow a little better. Would that make more sense?
Well, that's my opinion. I certainly don't, board staff can obviously they're your better guidance. It's there, and I think that's the important part, but it just kind of flows a little bit interestingly. And then some other questions I had. So you have materials are are part of the students' responsibilities. One question I had is, if you don't provide the materials or you don't have the materials on your campus and students have to get it, how far in advance do they get the materials list, the books that they have to find from Amazon or wherever else? How far in advance do they get those?
Well, they would be registering for class. Our hope is to have them their final registrations at least 30 days ahead, so to give them time to order the materials for the class.
Oh, okay. So they're provided that upon registration?
Yes, that they would be provided their book list and a syllabus.
Okay, got it. Thank you. So I had the other question was your newest catalog says it's February 6, 2020. So you're going to plan to go back and update that based on any changes too?
You're saying when it's effective, I'm sorry?
Yeah, uh-huh.
The effective date on the very cover?
Yeah, it says 0260 as stated in the enrollment agreement. It's I don't know. It's somewhere in here. Oh, it says, I hereby acknowledge I've received Justice College's catalog dated 020620. So I'm assuming if you're going to do the fall, I would imagine you would have had something newer by then, but.
Okay. What? I'm sorry. Did you see what page that was, Dr. Luck?
It is on 506.
Okay.
And I don't know, I'll have to look at my notes, but I don't know if that's the same date on the catalog. You know, you'd have to just find it in both places. I also didn't know, I thought this was interesting. You have a section where it has the student understands and it has four bullet points and it says Justice College does not guarantee job placement to graduates, right? And then it has, you have the right to reschedule and the right to discontinue and blah, blah. But then right after that, you have student grievance procedure. And then right after that, you have the student acknowledgements, one of which is acknowledging that you don't promise employability. So it's kind of in two places, but separated by something else. So I didn't know if that was purposeful or it was accidentally duplicative.
So that was last year when we submitted it was like that, but it could be that we mistakenly put it in twice. So I'd like to go back and edit that if that's your suggestion.
Yeah, I would just probably, I don't know that you know what I mean? If they're going to acknowledge it with the signature, I don't know that you need it in the other, you know what I mean? Because
absolutely.
One of the things with the EAs is trying to keep them as most pertinent information that they need to know, you know, so.
Okay.
Okay, under your degree program descriptions, one thing I found interesting was that your international business degree is titled a Bachelor of Arts. And I thought that was interesting because that's not typical, because obviously the arts are with humanities and social sciences, and sciences are with math and science, and the business is mostly math. So why is it a Bachelor of Arts?
So our goal is to be a liberal arts college, and there are a number of liberal arts colleges with BAs in business. You are right. Most of them tend to lean towards the sciences, but that was our goal in this, was that it also be driven by the same kind of education as the other programs.
Yeah, I understand. I guess one thing I would just wonder is how that will affect students looking for, you know, for a program, because I'm thinking a business student would typically be looking for a BS. So I just would think it might challenge you a little bit because that's not, you know, as typical as it being a science oriented. And you can still be a liberal arts institution because you're still having math, science, you know what I mean? It's the whole, a liberal arts institution is everything, right? It's not just the humanities or the social sciences. It's the totality of being a well-rounded student. So that was that. In the catalog, you were specifically, you're listed as president, but you're also listed as director. And I was curious as if the director was of the Board of Trustees. Like, does that mean you're the chair of the Board of Trustees?
I'm a non-voting member of the Board of Trustees and the chair of the Board of Trustees, but I'm a non-voting member, yes.
So what does the director part refer to?
It refers to our incorporation.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay. And then you list, instead of having the Board of Trustees, which is typically what we see, you have an advisory Board of Trustees. I was curious as to why the advisory part was in there.
It's the same because we have when we incorporated, there was a Board of Directors, which is the same as the advisory board, but it's Board of Trustees, yes.
Okay. All right. faculty members in the catalog. If you're going to list them, you might want to consider putting their credentials there. That's typical of accreditors. They want to see the list of faculty. So only one of those in your catalog has the doctor associated with their name, but it also doesn't say what their field is. I did see a different document that had your faculty with their credentials, but it's not in the catalog. And so if you're going to list them, I think I would recommend you do that, because I think it would end up coming up, I'm pretty sure.
Well, and you're right, because in our IERs for tracks for accreditation, they did ask for all the credentials. So in our submittal to them, we have all of their field and their credentials. I would like to duplicate that and put in the catalog. So with your permission, after this meeting, we'll amend the catalog with the other suggestions and put in the same list as it appears with tracks with the additional information.
Is that okay, Dr. Lett? Oh, for me, I would recommend that for you. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the way that the programs are laid out, you put your program titles in there, and then you have all the courses that are associated with it, right? Yeah. Later on, you put the program again, and you list all the courses associated with it with credits, as in a course walk, if you will.
Right.
One thing I might suggest is that you might want to think about putting those two things together, because the first thing that I noticed was in your course descriptions, you typically would put any credits associated with that course, how many credits it is with the course description. You would also put any prereqs that are required there, and any field hours, practicum hours, clinic, whatever it is, would be in that course description. So when you have them separated out, I was like, huh, they don't have the credits. And then I had to go all the way down to find, oh, there are credits, but really should probably be together if you're going to do it that way versus a course description section of a catalog, which might be in the very back. Does that make sense? It's just the way that it's organized for you might be easier if it's together.
I agree, and it will make more sense. We went off a template that we're given, a year and a half ago, but absolutely, I'd like to go in and make those revisions, because it will make more sense as a student is looking through the descriptions to see all the credit hours.
Yeah, they don't want to go to two different places when they're looking for their one program. Yeah,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. I agree. Thank you.
Okay. The other thing I thought was interesting, the way you guys have done that, and I haven't actually seen this before, so I just want to plug it in there. When we're doing degree programs, right, you're going to have a component of a general education, and the general education is going to be all of the things that you had in there, right? It has, the English requirements, the psych, whatever your school determines is a general ed. But you guys also put the electives in the general ed, and you don't typically see that. You typically see electives as being separate, because a general education is about, it's like a mini program within the degree. It's what you believe that all students should be able to do, regardless of the degree that they take with your institution. And so I would probably encourage you to separate that out. Accreditors usually have a recommendation as far as credits are concerned. I think the one I'm super familiar with is one-thirds of 40 credits. So when you have a 75 credit GE, it looks very strange. And it really isn't, because you could accept and transfer all those electives. It's not a part of your required GE, which may be more specified. So that was just something I noticed, because your actual majors are pretty small with 45. Right. So 75 GE looks kind of interesting. But then later on in the document, you actually do separate them out when you're talking about your graduation requirements, where you say so many electives, you must meet electives as separate. You must meet your major as a separate. Right. And so you might want to think about compartmentalizing things, because you're going to need that for assessment purposes, too. You're going to have to go back and assess your GE. So if the electives are stuck in there, it's going to be very hard to, necessarily assess that. If there's a pool of anything they could possibly take for that. So something for you to think about.
No, and then, I like your suggestion a lot. I think we should break them out, and we can absolutely do that, but still keep them as part of the catalog, but separate.
Yeah. And then your math requirement, fundamentals of math seemed a little bit as a lower level requirement for a bachelor's degree than I've typically seen. Usually, I think like college algebra is usually something like that. So I just wanted to point that out. I don't know how your specific accreditor might see that, but it did seem a little bit lower than what I've normally seen. And then obviously all the comments that I've made in the EA, because it looks like your enrollment agreement is copied into your catalog, would also apply to your catalog.
Okay. Yeah.
I have more. Your admissions requirement, you have it as a 2.0 for high school as a GPA. Again, you'll have to probably talk to your accreditor, but I don't think I've seen one that's that low for a high school GPA. If I see a 2.0, it's usually after so many college credits. Maybe it's a 2.0 and they have an associate's. But a 2.0 for high school is pretty low. And so you could have some interesting conversations with your accreditor about how you're ensuring that they're college prepared with that. And then your GED doesn't have a score associated with it. So, you know, GED has the same type of thing where, you know, it's scaled. You can associate whatever your GPA is to the GED score. So to make sure that your students are prepared for college, you might want to look at that and see what your accreditor recommends as far as standards are for incoming students.
So I like what you're saying. And if it's okay with you, I will pursue that with Dr. Cannon at Tracks, because I do think you're right. We could, if we allowed in students with a low GPA, we could list prerequisites that they would have to enter into and pass some marks before meeting the requirements. Does that sound correct?
Yeah, because if you admit students who aren't prepared for college, you're going to run into issues when your completion percentages and your graduation percentages, if they're not ready and they withdraw, you're going to be hurting. Now, at the same time, is it great to give students an opportunity? Yes. But you have to put in a lot of support and safeguards and stuff for that. Whether you're giving them a chance to demonstrate. But I just 2.0 is very, I mean, you have to graduate from high school with a 2.0. So that means every high school graduate can go to college, which, you know, obviously we're all trying really hard to do that, but you're going to be measured by this. So just understand what it is you're saying.
I appreciate your feedback. No, I'll work on that with our team and with our contacted Tracks.
Okay, great. It's looked like your semesters are 15 weeks, which is super typical. That's great. Am I correct in that assumption?
Correct. That's correct.
Okay. But your SAP policy says you're going to run that every 9 weeks. And I was completely baffled by how that would ever work, because SAP is usually run at the end of the term. You wouldn't even have a GPA to run it at 9 weeks, let alone completion, because it's the totality of that semester if all your courses are 15 weeks. So that part I didn't understand.
So it pretty much needs to be at the end of the semester before we can evaluate that, correct?
Yeah, you can go ahead and look at some of the Department of Ed, you know, the requirements as far as SAP is concerned, but I don't know what you would measure, because they wouldn't have had done any, you know, I mean, there's nothing to measure if there's no grades posted, because they're all 15-week courses. It just, there won't be anything to do.
Okay, I think we should go in and revise that then, Dr. Leck.
Yeah. So I'm going to encourage you to go look at that material, because your second step in SAP, so SAP goes SAP warning, and then it goes SAP suspension. And those are generally numerical, right? It's based on a qualitative score of grades that comes out in GPA, and it's based on a quantitative score of progress made, whether or not they're withdrawing or not completing. On your policy, you call it out as academic dismissal, which is just, if you're going to do SAP and you want to look at that, you might want to, based on the fact that you're already entering into an accreditation process. But it also says that the academic dean has final authority. So SAP is usually I guess one of the things I would be worried about with that is that, you know, if that's discretionary on a dean, you're going to have students that are upset when, you know, they put SAP suspension on a student on some, and they let other students go through, you know, without necessarily an appeal process or anything like that. And So you just don't want to get into trouble with your SAP policy, I don't think. So something else is just, it's not really usually subjective. I've not seen that.
Well, yes, we're trying to give the students an opportunity, was our thinking in that, but I think you're right. In order for it to, for there to be equity, regardless of the student, we should take the subjectivity out of it. I agree.
I would. Otherwise, you'll get to spend more time with Mr. Tharp and Mr. Romano. Okay. And I prefer it not be me, but
okay.
Just letting you know, that will be a big mess if you add subjectivity into SAP, just saying.
Okay, I'd like to revisit that. And if it's okay with you, I would like to revise it. And with Keith Blanchard's advice, maybe before we correct it in a catalog.
Sure.
Okay.
There's lots of resources out there. Don't reinvent the wheel, if you know what I mean. The wheel's already invented for pretty much everybody. So just go find a few wheels that you like, you know, and.
Okay.
Okay. You also, in your catalog, talk about short-term classes. So I didn't know if you really do have short-term classes. How long are short-term classes? Because I thought they were all 15 weeks. So I didn't know what that meant.
Well, I think that would be referring to our summer blocks, but it would still be the same amount of hours they would put in for the class, but it would be in a condensed, just referring to a condensed number of weeks.
Okay, you might want to clarify that then, as far as which term those might appear, because it doesn't say it, so I didn't get that picture. You also have in there about computer competency requirements. I was not clear if those computer competency requirements are tested before enrollment. And if they're not tested before enrollment and they get into it and they don't have these competencies that you say, what are you going to do?
Okay, well, let us put some work into that, because I think definitely we could put them through some tutoring or coaching to bring them up to speed, but that would be before enrollment. So let us revise that one too.
Okay. Your notice of non-discrimination, I didn't look at what page this was, but it uses the word handicap. Non-discrimination, I've never seen have that. It's usually disability. So you might want to go look at those.
Okay.
And then make sure they're consistent. I would do that too, because I saw you had several in there, but they tend to say different things. And in your disciplinary process under the, it says it's under the supervision of deans and president. I'm going to go back to my SAP explanation of, you know, if each dean gets to do something different and they all don't have the same expectations for the same type of infraction, you're going to end up with a large variance of sanctions. And then once a student finds out that someone who has the same who is treated differently for the same sanction, you're going to run into problems. So you might want to also have a lot of discussion about what that looks like, so you're not, people aren't all over the place doing whatever they want. You'll end up with a lot of problems. And then you'll have an appeal process. And it talks about how you can appeal the dean's decision, but it doesn't say who's reviewing that dean or the dean's decision. Is it the dean again? Like, they can appeal back to the dean? Or is it, you know, someone else that's reviewing the whole thing?
It would be the provost or a vice president. So I need to add that verbiage. Yes.
Yeah. And then always make it or designee, because you'll run into problems there. And then my last one that I had was the graduation thing. So when you look at graduation, you break it out differently. You have it says something like electives, the major, and then it has something like language competency courses, which I thought your language competency courses were part of your general ed. So it didn't make sense why that was called out, but none of your other sections under GE were called out. So it's just about kind of, you know, reviewing it, because you're not going to say that the language competency is more important than one of your other subcategories of your general ed.
Okay. Let me revisit that verbiage with our team, if that's okay.
Absolutely. And with that, I would love to see if my colleagues have any questions.
You really did leave a whole lot untouched, right. Dr. Leck. Yeah. I mean, I guess we could do a physical examination, but
you don't have the authority
for taking the time to read through that so closely.
Thank you, Assistant AG. We will not perform that physical examination, but we do appreciate the thoroughness, Dr. Leck, but please do not interpret our lack of questions at this point as a result of not reviewing the materials. I do not have any questions further than what you have gone into.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Tharp?
None for me, Dr. Leck. You were very thorough.
Mr. Wallace?
I don't have any additional questions.
Mr. Ball?
No additional questions. Thank you.
Okay. Well, with that.
Hold on, Dr. Leck, Mr. Chairman. I see Mr. Blanchard raised his hand. I don't know.
I can't see that. How do you see that?
Yeah, thank you. Hey, Dr. Leck, so in your motion, you're requiring some updated information. They're not accredited yet, so I don't know if you want to have a catalog full of accreditation issues or not issues, but policies when they're not accredited. So in your motion, can you clarify what you're changing their catalog that's specific to us?
I have I can send my list, Keith, and it's not about them necessarily being accredited or not being accredited. What I'm talking about are standard academic practices that will matter to them when they try to get accredited. So it would end up changing it for students, potentially like halfway through, because what I'm talking about is very normal standard practices. Does that make sense? But I have a whole list. I can send it to you.
Keith, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. I think that we can have a general motion, and then it's going to be, at the end of the day, it's going to be up to the school to comply with the requirements of the board. So I don't think it's necessary that she transmit that to you, as you know, the school is on the call and they've had the discussion as well today.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, Dr. Leck, as a point of clarification, so in the approval of this, if there are specific, as AG Seamus Monahan explained, if there are specific issues that are not compliant with state statute or state rule, then those would need to be addressed. If there aren't those and they're just recommendations, that would be something that, Dr. Leck, if you would pass to us, we would pass to the school, and then it's up to them to make changes or not, but it's not as it relates to statute or rule.
Correct. Okay, so with that, right? So with that, I would like to make a motion to approve the conditional to provisional degree granting license application with the stipulation that the $15,000 surety bond be maintained. Is that agreeable to Justice College?
Yes, and thank you so much for that recommendation, Dr. Luck.
Okay. Is there a second?
Glenn Tharp, second.
Okay, I'm done.
Well, let's do a roll call vote. We can start with Mr. McMahon.
You're doing fine, Dr. Luck. Please continue.
Sorry. Oh, gosh. Am I good now? Sorry, I missed some of that. It broke up a little bit. So, Mr. Mike Romano, your vote?
Aye.
And Mr. Glenn Tharp, your vote?
Aye.
Mr. Doug Ball?
Aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck?
Aye.
And Mr. Scott Wallace?
Aye.
It is 5 ayes, and the motion passes.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much for your time today, and you can get your I Survived Dr. Leck t-shirt on your way out. I'm just having fun.
I actually want that.
I am just kidding, of course, Dr. Leck. We do appreciate that thoroughness, and obviously for all the other schools, we're here to help you be successful, and those recommendations come with a very experienced individual in a number of board seats, Dr. Leck, so we appreciate that. All right. As we progress through, we will move on to renewal applications of conditional to regular
And the first up is ATI Home Inspector Training, and I am the lead on that particular one. So, Mr. LaMountain, would you please provide a brief update?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Before the board today is a conditional regular non-accredited vocational program license for ATI Home Inspector Training. If you recall, ATI was in front of the board last year to grant their to get their initial grant of licensure. In front of the board today is Ms. Katie Cooper, and I believe there's some others as well that are joining her. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Cooper, would or anyone else from the school, would you like to introduce yourselves and make an opening statement? Ms. Cooper, are you on? If you are, we are not hearing you. Is there any representation from ATI Training?
Yes, hi, this is Amy and Scott, newcomer, and I believe Katie didn't hit pound six if she was going to give the opening statement, but I can give the opening statement. Scott and I are the president and vice president of ATI Home Inspector Training, and I was there in person last year to get our initial approval, and we have continued quite the successful growth during COVID. As we immediately switched our courses as soon as we were approved in each state to virtual. So most of our classroom courses are available live virtual through Zoom, and it has actually increased our students and our profits by at least double. Katie actually has the financials in front of her, but our enrollment for 2021 for even the state of Arizona are going to quadruple.
Thank you. We appreciate that. And yes, I was that was kind of going to be the crux of some of the discussion I wanted to have. It looks like you are experiencing a large amount of growth with just the enrollments and obviously the revenue piece of it. So congratulations on that success. Obviously, we know the real estate market is hot here in Arizona, but elsewhere as well. So it makes sense that there's a need for additional home inspectors. To clarify, you have moved solely to an online platform, or does that still include that kind of hands-on kind of experience and training?
It does still include the hands-on training. So we are doing the classroom portion, virtual, as well as the online, but we do still have the field training portion in person with licensed Arizona home inspectors.
And I know I speculated in regards to the demand out there in the marketplace with the increase in enrollments and obviously people moving through the program. How does it look from an employability standpoint? How are you overseeing to make sure there isn't a saturation point that's hit?
So right now, almost everywhere in the country, we have multiple home inspectors who are currently in business begging for job placement boards for any of our students. I have not encountered one existing home inspector that hasn't had a record year, and we've been training for decades, so we have access to all of the current home inspectors as well. And so there is not any sign of anything slowing down with the real estate market. I know that some of the areas, you know, have limited inventory, but that is not stopping multiple offers, multiple home inspections from going on.
Thank you for that. Again, it's great success from that standpoint. As I had a chance to review your materials, and I recall you guys being in last year, and we were able to button down a number of items, I feel as though I don't have any other concerns that I necessarily needed to bring forward from that standpoint. Board members, anything else from your review of these records that causes concern?
Thank you.
No, not for me, Mr. Romano.
No.
I'm good.
Okay. Nope.
It's pretty straightforward school and what you're doing there, and we're excited about the growth. And obviously, as we continue to move forward, we can explore additional adjustments in the surety bond and the need to continue that particular piece of it. I am going to make a motion, though, that we approve the conditional to regular vocational program license application with the stipulation that you do maintain the $20,000 surety bond at this point in time. We can reevaluate later. So that is my current motion. Do I have a second on that motion?
I second. This is Doug.
Ah, thank you, Ms. Ball. We appreciate that. Schooled, do you, Ms. Newcomer, do you agree to the stipulation?
Yes, of course.
Thank you. Of course. Any further discussion from the board? All right. Ms. Kurtz, if you would take roll.
Of course. Mr. Mike Romano, your vote?
Aye.
Mr. Glenn Tharp?
Aye.
Mr. Doug Ball?
Aye.
Dr. Leck?
Aye.
And Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
That's five ayes, and the motion passes.
Fantastic. Mr. and Mrs. Newcomer, we wish you continued to success, and we look forward to seeing you again not soon enough. Have a wonderful rest of the day.
Thank you. Thank you all for your time. Have a great day.
Absolutely. All right. We will now move on to the renewal application conditional to regular for Medical Sales College. Mr. Thorpe being the lead on that.
Hi, welcome. And who's our representatives from the college? And
yep, you've got Jim Rogers here, the CEO of the college. I'm also here joined by our controller, Hillary Orr, our licensing manager, Ashley Seeley, and our head of education is Kim Smalley.
Hi, guys. So you want to give an opening statement?
Sure. First of all, appreciate you guys having us here today, and we certainly appreciate what you folks do. Last year, we, as you know, got approval or conditional approval through you folks, or provisional approval, I should say. And it was kind of near and dear to us because both Kim and I are equally, we're both from Phoenix. And so it was a great opportunity to give back to our roots there in the Arizona area. Probably picking the pandemic to start in wouldn't have been ideal, but it's worked out just fine for us. So we've been very pleased as to the successes we've had, both in finding the right people there in the Phoenix marketplace and the successes we're seeing with those folks in job placement. So again, thanks for having us here.
Yeah, you're welcome. And yeah, tough time to start any school, I'm sure. How many students did you have over the last year?
Last year, we had 29 students there for our Phoenix campus.
Did they all graduate?
We did have all 29 of those students graduated, yes.
Okay. Gotcha. And you said the right student, and that is part of my questioning when I want to go down here. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about the enrollment agreement, because you have demographic information that you want disclosed on there, which is not forbidden, but being on the complaint committee, it makes me nervous. You also ask the year of high school graduation, kind of called out what they're. And if I was a skeptical man, I'm saying they're doing that to ask my age without asking me my age. You know, basically. So can you explain why that information's on there, why you felt it's important, especially the graduation date from high school?
Yeah, we track that information really for marketing efforts to figure out what kind of responses we're getting in different advertising that we're doing. You know, we don't necessarily have a specific market that we have to attract, meaning the majority of our customers do tend to sway to a little bit more of the I call them a little bit more green individual people coming straight out of college, but we've been equally successful with people in their 30s and 40s and 50s. So we don't have any practice that quote unquote discriminates by any suggestion. But what we do is we want to make sure we have the right committed people where people aren't assuming that it's going to be an easy process with what we do, both in education and what they do in this profession post-graduation.
Agreed. I mean, I was a surgical tech for a number of years, so I worked with many, many sales reps and working ortho and neuro. So I'm well aware of the what that takes. I guess would suggest a lot of schools do it on a different form to gather demographic stuff and like that, because a challenge. I'm trying to save you a headache of somebody challenging you and saying you didn't let me in because of my race or my age or something of that. So it's nothing I can direct you to do. It's something I would encourage you to do. Okay. Under the admissions process, too, you do talk a lot about wanting to choose the right person and to determine the right person. Yet I don't have any exposure on any type of subjective rubric that you may possibly use to do that. So can you take us through what you mean by that and how do you assess that?
Yeah.
Do you objectively assess that and how you could show to an outside party should somebody complain that you did it objectively?
Sure. It's one of the reasons why we don't keep it open enrollment. I mean, I can give you an exact example of this very recent. We had somebody who came through our course, was hired by a major medical device company in this very lucrative industry, and quit 4 days later after he got hired on the basis that he felt he didn't know he had to move a bunch of sets around in ORs and would spend time in his car. And it's just non-traditional hours. And so as opposed to let somebody just randomly apply to our school openly, we put them through a process where we want to explain what the demands of this industry is. We certainly don't want a student coming in here who's accepted, pays a tuition, and then finds out that the hours don't necessarily fit with their lifestyle. Because as you would remember as a surgical tech, we don't have 9 to 5 hours. And some of our jobs, quite honestly, are trauma, and these people are on call. So we want to spend enough time in that process, A, making sure that they understand it is a kind of a lifestyle change with what we do in many of the openings, and we want to make sure they're committed to that and have full understanding. So we put them through that process as part of our enrollment.
But what is the process you put them through? That's what I'm saying. You know, how do you show the public, should you be challenged, that you graded everybody the same? You know, a lot of people use a rubric that's, you know, this bomb, 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 and stack rank.
Yeah, we're careful not to have a rubric, and quite frankly, that does kind of separate us. We don't have a GPA that is an example that will dictate whether or not somebody's going to be successful in our industry. So what we've done to hopefully find the right people, we have industry experts that have been on the other side of the aisle, meaning the people that work internally for us who work in that area of having conversations with prospective students have on average about 20 years of experience in the device industry, much of that in hiring people. And so we use a traditional CRM system. We keep extremely detailed notes of every conversation through the interview process. So the first process of the first step of the process is a conversation with one of those people. They then move on a complete about an hour and a half going through every detail of what our process is in education, what our expectations are of a student and what the student expectations should be of us. And then they finally have a call with what is our placement services to determine whether or not they again are committed and have the right background in the right field for our industry. And all of that is well documented for an instance like you would suggest.
Okay. I just want to make sure, because without that, I get the converse. You take a pride, or you take steps not to have a rubric. But I would just tell you, again, as somebody who sat on the complaint committee for many years, it's going to be the burden is on the school to prove you didn't discriminate against somebody.
Right.
And without any type of objective measure, it really falls into the subjective realm that somebody that's worked in the industry said for 30 years says he doesn't think I'd be good at this, so I can't go to school. So I just warn you about all those. That's, you know, kind of, again, I'm not conscripting that you have to do what you have to do, but it just is a concern point for me.
Sure. And, you know, we've done this for 10 years, and it's not to say that can't find somebody who bucks the system. You know, our biggest concern is it's an extremely lucrative industry to get into. And unfortunately, you do have people shopping online that are looking to, in their mind, buy a job. And that's not what we're looking for. Last thing we want to do is have an uncommitted person that doesn't have the
opportunity. I absolutely understand your point of view, too. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying, you know, everybody walks through your doors, gets to come in. I'm just saying the method by which you qualify a person should be kind of lockstep so you can present it to any outside body should somebody complain. I'm glad you never had any complaints. Hope you never do. But it's in this day and age, you know, everybody's looking for something. Yeah.
And I'll make one other suggestion, not to get detailed into this and take all your time, but we don't necessarily get in the position to tell somebody they can't come to the medical sales college. we just put them through a process that by going through multiple steps and having direct conversations about what the expectation of the industry is, it could perhaps discourage them, but we're not discouraging them. We just give them the information to the industry.
Okay.
So we don't have a scenario where I think somebody to come in and say, discriminate against me because I'm 53 and, you know, I see on your website, you get a lot of 22-year-olds.
Okay. Fiscally, how are you doing? I got the profit and loss, but it's been an eye test for me. I can barely read it. So it looks like last year you weren't profitable. You had a operating loss, not a big one, but I don't think it's big. I can't see if there's a decimal point there. So
it's not, we were fairly break even for last year. And so we were pleased with everything going on. We were pleased with how that worked out for us. We are trending this year to be positive. So all is good at this point.
Okay. And then your marketing efforts, everything going well with that?
Yep. We haven't seen any challenges associated with that.
How do you market mostly?
About 50% of our students now actually come through word of mouth, most often from former students that have attended the medical sales college. And so if you looked at, the student enrollment that we have, it's coming from there or the industry employers who are directing people to attend. And so that's kind of our fastest growing area for what we do, which also, is a good thing. And we take pride in that. Outside of that, it's just traditional marketing. I think most schools would have. So we're on social media platforms. Obviously, we get a lot of people who come to our website, and those tend to be the ways that we find students.
Okay. Those were really my line of questioning, fellow Mr. Chairman, fellow board members. I, again, would ask if anybody has the questions, and I would ask Doug and Scott if they have any fiscal questions. Because
I don't know what kind of question this is, but looking at your financial statements, what is Meritize holdback fee?
Yeah, that is. We work with a skills-based funding company. There are a few of them out there. So there's a risk there where they'll finance the students. But part of the student is we take part of the risk associated with that holdback, and that's what that holdback is.
Related to financing fees and tuition and things?
That's correct.
Okay.
Private lender, yeah. Okay, anybody else have any questions? One of the things I want to call out, which will be in my motion, is your current surety bond's $15,000. But based on your reported gross tuition ratings this year, that it looks like that would increase to $53,666, and I just want you to be aware of that.
Yeah, we as of April 13th have a new bond that is already in force that Kim will be setting out. That is an amount of
$120,000.
So it's over the requested amount.
Wow, there you go. So don't hear that too often. Thank you.
when you have nine other states, you get used to this.
Okay. All right. If there's no further questions, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to proceed with a motion.
Please.
Okay. So I would like to make a motion that we approve the conditional to regular vocational program license application for medical sales college with the following stipulation: that they maintain the surety bond with the minimum amount being $53,666.
I'll second that.
Okay, motion and a second. Oh, sorry, Mr. Chairman, go.
Does the school agree to that stipulation?
Absolutely.
Very good. Any further discussion by the board? Ms. Kurtz, if you would, roll.
Of course, Mr. Yokomoto, your vote.
Aye.
Mr. Glenn Tharp.
Aye.
Mr. Doug Ball.
Aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck.
Aye.
And Mr. Scott Wallace.
Aye.
With five ayes, the motion passes.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Congratulations, guys.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Thank you very much for your time and your for preparation and attendance today. We'll now move on to our initial applications. one of our favorites coming up, repeat coming around, and Mr. Thorpe taking the lead on that, Ocean Point Dental Academy.
Okay, so this is for initial condition for non-credited vocational license for Ocean Point Dental Academy. So of Phoenix, so do we have any representatives of the school here? I think I see the doctor down below, but would you like to make a statement?
Yeah. And also Bruce Vermeulen under the name of Julian. Unfortunately, I tried to sign in and sign out again, but it didn't work. So.
All right. Would either of you like to make an opening statement about the school? How's it going? I mean, what, you know, plans or anything that we should know?
Yeah, I think I'll start on that before Dr. Polis. I think coming away from the last meeting and the submissions that we've made is a lot of the emphasis was about the sort of ability of, the academy, Dr. Polis being able to run the school on his own. We submitted an agreement, which we totally rewrote in that regard, to make sure that happens, and between the two, between last meeting and this one, Dr. Polis has undergone, several training sessions to as part of that process. In addition, we changed our sort of website strategy. I think you looked at the website, and there are multiple locations and intimating that they were going to be open shortly, and sort of gave the impression maybe that we sort of bigger than we really are. So we've really changed that, because I think the comments that the board made were very, very valid, and we've changed that to, first of all, emphasis to make every school that we work with through the licensing process and the initial phases are, at the time of licensing, ready to stand on their own feet and with or without MCP, because we realize that from this meeting, too much help is maybe not a good thing, because they have to operate without us as well. And the second point is we've changed our website strategy, so each dentist now or each school is totally in control of their own website. So even though they use the Ocean Point brand, they individually, and you'll no longer see the websites collectively, they each got a different domain name. They're actually subdomains, but you won't see those schools, all as one collective body. And I think that will help satisfy the state's sort of concern that, well, we're looking at Ocean Point, but who are they, where are they? And they're not sort of under the jurisdiction of Arizona, specifically. So the school is totally independent. They use our marketing, et cetera. They can choose at any time to not. You license our curricula, and they can choose at any time to change that as well. So I wanted to make that as an opening statement. We've also, taken heed of the advertising materials to avoid stating, specific hourly rates without, backing that up. And also the pass rates that were quoted, we've taken those down. And I think the management of MCP fully understands that, those have to be substantiated across all the licensed schools and not one specific school that we had at the time. So, Dr. Polis, I don't know if you want to add to that.
I don't think I have anything specific to add. I think we've submitted the paperwork to the board. I am prepared to get started. I do have a dental assisting instructor. I have two of my existing assistants willing to act as tour guides and admissions representatives. So I think we're in pretty good shape to get going.
Yeah, I'd say it looks better for sure. I didn't have a ton of stuff. I thought the catalog looked pretty good. I do have a couple things I really want to talk out with you, though, briefly. On page 39 and 40, talks about attendance and says missing more than 30 minutes must be contacted right away and redone. But then on page 40, under reasons for terminate or completion and stuff, it says that somebody can miss up to 16 hours. So can you clarify that? Do they have to make it up or do they not have to make it up?
They'd have to make it up. Yeah, they right. If they miss, but they've still got to make it up because, I mean, they won't know how to do anything if they miss the time. They've got to, you know, it's sort of like the 10,000 hours.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you, and I'm not here to say they do or they don't. All I'm saying is your catalog says they can. A reason for termination is, you know, or if you miss more than 40 hours, you know. So I mean, 16 hours. So if you're, you know, if they have a makeup mechanism, it doesn't go well with the statement right above it, where if you miss 30, if you're more than 30 minutes late, you got to contact the instructor to do that. So you need to look at that and clean that up a bit, okay?
Okay, we can do that.
So, yeah, that's not none of. And then on 40 under the termination section, what it says, say one of the reasons you list is it says must be completed, complete the program in a maximum time frame. I went through the catalog and a couple times, but maybe I'm just missing it in my old age. I can't find anywhere where the maximum time frame is defined.
Yeah, so like we'll have the 12 courses, and then you know, they need to complete those. If they don't complete them on the first go around, we'll probably have a second go around starting. So we do have that opportunity of offering them a second chance. But you know, I think if someone signs up, we want them to show up.
No, that's perfectly good. I'm trying. Well, my specific question is, what is the maximum time frame for them to complete? Because it is listed as a reason they can be terminated.
Yeah, I would say 12 months. Yeah.
Okay, so, well, you're gonna have to add that into the catalog because it's not in there. You have to define.
If I can clarify, and I will specifically change the catalog to address that. But we expect the students to do any makeup work within, you know, within a 2-week period. So.
Okay, well, whatever it is, please state it, because again, if you terminated me because you said I violated maximum time frame, I'd come right back to you and say, well, there's nowhere it defines what the maximum time frame is. You know?
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, because I know, like that fellow that was complaining about that other tuition earlier in the meeting, you know, it seems like he would always skip around and go back and forth and he never made up his mind. So we want someone that's dedicated to make up their mind and, you know, get with the program. We'll give them enough time to get it straightened out if they have family issues, but we don't want anyone to dilly-dallies forever and not get.
It's not a question of intent or what you want. I get that. What I'm saying is it's simple, black and white. Say maximum time frames. If you violate, you're terminated, yet it's not defined what that is. So I need that defined. Okay.
We'll do.
Yeah. The second, let me get to the right thing here. Hold on. I want to draw your attention to, I'm sorry, I'm not turning my back on you. My screen is over here that has this stuff up on, so they don't have the all-around camera. So if we go to your marketing pieces, for dental assistants, it says, you know, it says change your life in 14 weeks, and this is the one that's in blue and has the green and blue lettering and such like that, right? So I went through that. It seems to be largely in compliant. But then as I click down through here, I get to this other one that's the smaller one with a girl in somebody's mouth. It says start dental assistant career in only 12 weeks. So then your catalog actually says that it's 12 weeks for dental assisting, and 14 weeks for dental assisting and 11 weeks for reception.
Reception, so. So, Mr. Chair, we need to amend that. It's 14 weeks. Absolutely.
Yeah. So you'll need to change the 14-week one because it's not truth in advertising then. Okay.
Right.
All right. Catalog. I got the admissions piece. That was done much better. So, again, overall, much better job. And I don't have any further questions at this point. So I'll turn it over to Mr. Chairman to see if any of the boards have any.
Yeah, I'll jump. So I'm going to be very frank here. Although I know the board or the staff has worked with you immensely on preparations, we've had a number of back and forths here. I'm a little off-put by some of your answers and even preparation. I mean, this is a number of times where you seem like you're moving around while we're in this discussion. I don't know if that's because you're trying to manage other business. And even the answers that you continue to provide are more off-the-cuff type of answers of how you feel versus how a school should actually operate. And it does concern me greatly, consumers coming in to experience education. And I think you'll do what you need to do situationally to help them. That will be inconsistent with school guidelines of what you have in print. It will create confusion and frustration. And I am still very much on the fence of whether you can actually operate a school or not, and if we're really helping students who would want to receive this education by approving you to be able to dispense this education to them. I'm being very candid here around that. Help me appreciate how you are thoroughly prepared to operate this type of a business and live within the standards that are expected from the state.
I think in terms of the standards, the paperwork will be corrected to be expressing what's there. The lessons are created in such a way that I have a good source of the lessons, and then we also have the textbook that is pretty much a standard textbook of education. And I know I've trained a lot of dental assistants over the years. I think fitting the guidelines of the school, I've got MCT and Bruce and his team to help me. I have a strong feeling that I can comply, I will comply, and that we won't have any students complaining that they didn't get their money's worth.
It's different, doctor, to train somebody, which I have no doubt you're a dentist. I'm sure you've trained a multitude of dental assistants. It's a much, much different thing to administrate a private post-secondary education place. And there's lots of rules with records maintaining. There's lots of nuances that you have to get. So what is your plan administratively, since you don't seem to have anybody on that's done that in the state?
Administratively, I've got the operations coordinator that MCT uses based out of Austin. He's in a position where he'll oversee all of my steps, all of my guides. I do have a large staff that he will work with and say, okay, here's the applications. We've shown a tour of the school. We've explained things. We've shown them the textbook.
Okay, let's take just to make me and maybe Mr. Romano feel somewhat better. Record retention. You know our rule for record retention, right? Student record.
Yes. Yeah. Like we've been retaining dental records for 7.
You're mixing apples and oranges. I understand your dental practice. I'm talking about the school right now.
Yeah. So we want
to. How are you going to maintain records, and do you know the time frame that you're required to keep them for?
The time frame, I'm not 100% sure on. The maintenance is with the electronic age, we do have the Google Docs, so they'll be essentially perpetually stored in Google Docs.
That's not secure, as I know. Maybe some of the IT people can jump in, maybe Dr. Lett.
Oh, my gosh.
They have to be... clear. Number two, records are kept in perpetuity. Go ahead, Dr. Lett.
Yeah, that's not acceptable at all. There, as an institution, you have to ensure privacy the same as you would for HIPAA. We have ours for FERPA. It cannot be out there on the drive. You have to be able to transcript courses and what they took, and be able to maintain if you're doing grades or any of that stuff. It's like running a dental practice, but for education. It's not the same thing. You can't mix your records. It's not the same.
Well, again, the administrative capacity is what concerns me, because I can't come into your school, your dental office, and run it. I can't, because I'm not. I could, but I run schools, and I know all that entails. And while it might be a singular program school, you still have to comply with all of those things, you know.
Okay.
Mr. Romano, Mr. Chair, I mean, I jumped you, so go ahead. I'm sorry.
This is where I am getting to, and I have no further questions at this point in time.
Okay. One thing I did miss that I have here that I want to talk about is you require 50 hours of externship, correct?
I believe we've amended that to 40 hours, but yes.
It's 50. 50 hours.
Your application still shows 50.
Yes. Okay.
How are you accomplishing that? And how many signed agreements between other dental offices to take students do you currently have?
I have no other signed agreements. I'm open 7 days a week. So I know my facility has, you know, at least 60 hours a week available for externship.
And how many students are you planning on taking per class?
You know, I think initially we're probably looking at 4 to 6, so I don't think it'll be a lot. You know, I really haven't pursued signing agreements because it's been such a long, laborious process to get approved as a school. You know, it's sort of like, oh, call up my buddies next door and say, hey, can you do an externship? And they'll say, sure. You know, and I don't get back to them for, you know, a year.
Yeah, it's more than that. That's what we want to stay away from, though, is the calling of buddies. I have no doubt you're very invested in and connected within the community to get those. But there does have to be some type of formal agreement, a memorandum of understanding at the least, that they're willing to do this, that they've been trained on what the expectations of those students are and for their educational practices.
Okay. We will get those. We have standard documentation for that. So we
do your other schools, Bruce, have them?
Yes.
Okay.
It is a requirement of all states to.
Bruce, I'd ask you, how can you make us more comfortable going forward if we're going to approve this today?
I'm purposely sort of, you know, staying in the background because you don't really want to hear from me. And I would really, the essence of the last board meeting, well, okay, that's great. You can provide all the record keeping, which we do with every state and meet every state's requirements and make sure that they do meet that. So what Dr. Polis does have behind him is, you know, we've got all the grading, you know, platforms. We've got all the transcript, you know, documentation. We've got the best of breed from, you know, almost now 35 states that we've been through this process with. So, you know, on one hand, I felt last time, you know, we do provide that to Dr. Polis, but I also realize if we don't transfer that knowledge, it doesn't give you any comfort either. So I would suggest is that we do this. We probably license in about 16, 17 states at the moment, and we've got 80 applications, you know, in with various states around the country. We provide that help to the dentists, and that's what we do. So, you know, I wanted to do that, but purposely sort of, you know, rather than me answering all the questions, the real issue is, you know, is Dr. Polis ready to run the school? My answer is we've got teams of experts that have, you know, run schools themselves, et cetera. My part is just the compliance part, but our team are very experienced in helping Dr. Polis, and if we have to fly someone to Arizona to help him do that, we'll do that. And as I say, we spent a lot of time over the last couple of weeks trying to better prepare Dr. Polis, you know, to, you know, meet the requirements of the board. And I think that's a very valid, you know, concern. We certainly, it affects us as well if it doesn't work out, because it's a lot of work to get, you know, approved by the state. And if he doesn't get approved, or he gets approved, and that's what we face. It's ongoing requirements as well that we sort of put all the documentation, and that's why we like to work with them for at least 12 months so that they can sort of go through a cycle of the regulation. You know, at the same time, we needed to meet your requirements of, well, that's good. Are you running the school as Dr. Polis? I mean, it's really, we have to find that balance. But I can assure you from Ocean Point.
Okay, I'm going to stop us right here. Thank you. I can't, in good, I mean, you're working with a patient right now.
This isn't okay.
This is not okay.
Do you want to defer? I'm just trying to think of my actions I have.
I would like to make a motion that at this point in time, we do not approve the licensure for the this conditional license. So apologize. I'm a little thrown off and disheartened. So that's my motion. I don't know if I get a second or not.
You get a second for me.
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. I apologize for interrupting, board members. And could you state, you know, a reason or a couple of reasons why you would like to deny the license?
Well, I would say, Mr. Chairman, AG Monahan, my biggest concern that I would like noted is I think they have the lack of administrative capability to effectively run a school, and I would like that added to your motion, if you would.
Absolutely. So I gladly amend the motion that we do not approve the conditional non-accredited degree license to, let me get the name right, Ocean Point Dental Academy of Phoenix, based on lack of administration oversight after numerous times coming towards the board and being unprepared to speak to how they would maintain the school. And as of right now, the person who is seeking the license is working on a patient.
So, I second.
Okay. Call for discussion. Anybody? I'm sorry. All right.
Ms. Kearse, would you please take the call? Mm-hmm.
So, Mr. Micromono, your vote?
Aye.
Mr. Glenthorpe, your vote?
Aye.
Mr. Doug Ball, your vote?
Aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck, your vote?
Aye.
And Mr. Scott Wallace, your vote?
Aye.
At this time, with five ayes, the motion to deny the license has passed.
Kevin Lamountain has raised his hand, so.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Regarding Dr. Polos and Mr. Vermeulen, I do believe, I don't think Mr. Or Dr. Poulos is on anymore. So just in terms of the communication that will be provided to you by the staff in the letter, we'll talk to you about the process if there is an appeal that you want to make based on the communication that you're receiving from us. That process will be detailed in the letter. Again, Dr. Poulos has left the meeting. So those are things you're going to have to work out. But thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Roman. Thank you, staff, as well. We know you've worked extremely hard to try and advance this school opportunity. And thank you very much, board, for moving through it. I do know we have a conflict of time. And so, Mr. Lamountain, are we within our rights? I want to be respectful to the last two schools that we have remaining, but we do have a conflict with Dr. Leck that we would like to respect. She is our lead on Precision Cosmetics Academy. Are we able to maybe advance Precision Cosmetics Academy forward and then move forward with the last school?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So we have had a request from Dr. Leck to move this forward for Precision. So there are no, if there are no objections to the other board members, we will move Precision up to now, and then final will be Richmonddale College.
Seems like there are no objections. So we will now move forward with Precision Cosmetics Academy. Dr. Leck, you are the lead.
Thank you so much. Mr. Chair. Okay, so would anyone from the institution like to introduce yourself and make an opening statement?
Yes. Hi, everyone. Can everyone hear me and see me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, awesome. My name is Danielle Reichel, Cosmetics. I appreciate all of your time. I've actually learned a lot in this meeting. That's been really good for me. I have owned a salon in Tucson coming on 4 years for permanent makeup, and I have a huge passion for educating and for teaching people that want to be in my industry because I love what I do. So opening up an academy was the logical next step. So I'm happy to answer any questions, and I'm just really excited to be here.
Well, great. Thank you, Camille. My first question that I have is, as I've read through all the documentation, there was a statement in there in your letter of intent where you made a statement that you ceased all training once you heard from the board. Can you talk to me about how long you were training and kind of how this came about?
Yes. So I believe I was training for almost a year. And again, I've been in this industry for almost 4 years, and I know a lot of people that train in other states. And so I honestly was completely unaware that I wasn't allowed to train. Upon speaking to Mr. Blanchard, he did know that I couldn't train beginners. So I took down my website and I ceased training beginners as soon as I heard from him, which I believe was around March of 2020.
Okay. I'm just trying to follow along. So is your salon called Precision Microblading LLC?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and is that funding the Precision Cosmetics Academy?
Yes, correct.
So any starting balances that you have is from your salon. So you're moving funds from one entity to another?
Yes. So the Precision Cosmetics Academy is not an LLC. It's just the business name that I chose for the academy, but all of the funding is coming from my salon.
Okay. I'll leave that to my fellow board members. Is there more financial? I don't know if that's allowed or not allowed. I don't know. Anyway, I just noticed it, so I thought I'd bring it up. It seems like, as I understand that you've gone through that application period, so you were told that you're not allowed to train as of March of 2020, and it took a long time for you to get all of the materials and kind of follow through on your application. I think one of the questions that we have is, you just heard about administrative capacity in order to run an entity. So do you think you have that if you're that busy already with your salon to be able to do this? Because this is all of us are professionals. This is a job, this is what we do for a living, and it's our only thing we do for a living. So it's kind of, when people are trying to spread their time against two competing interests, you cannot fail on students. They won't let you.
Yes, and I completely agree with that. And actually, my main focus on, if I do get the approval of this license, is going to be teaching. I will maybe take clients 2 days a week at max. And then my main focus will be the academy. And I also have an assistant, and she will be working for me up to 2 hours a day. And her sole responsibility is to respond to students in a timely manner and make sure that there's a correct line of communication between myself and the students, and that all questions are answered. So even though I have this one, I have people that rent for me as well, but my main focus is the academy. I want this so badly, and this is going to be my career until I can't work anymore.
Okay. If I looked at the materials, you had another instructor. Was it Heather? I believe the name was Heather.
Yes.
Okay. And it looked like they own their own business as well. So are they going to be split across things?
No, that's a great question. So Heather will never actually, she's never going to teach a class without me. She will always be with me kind of assisting, but I would be the only one teaching. Heather owns her own business in the sense that she has her own clientele and her own business team, but she rents from me. So so she knows that whenever I'm going to have a class, she will be assisting me, but I would never put the training entirely on her. It's all going to be me.
Okay, so that helps for another, I'll tell you a different reason about that later. But you talked about, like, when I looked at your faculty requirements, you talked about post-secondary education for microblading, specifically from an accredited institution. I wasn't sure, because the word accredited versus like authorized in a state, they're two very different terms. They mean different things. So who accredits microblading schools? There's no.
Yes. Okay. So that's a great question. And I should go in and change that because there actually aren't any regulations in the state of Arizona to perform permanent cosmetics. So I was under the impression in the beginning when all this happened that someone that worked for me had to go to a school that was approved by the Board of Post-Secondary Education, which I know AZ Brow Doctor and then the Brow Plug up in Phoenix both have the license. That was my understanding. That's why I put that in there. But if that's not required, then I will change that.
I don't think it's a thing. I don't think there is an accreditor over microblading that I'm aware of. Because to be an accreditor, you have to go through Department of Education. It's like a big thing.
Right.
So I just thought that might be, I didn't know if there was something I didn't know, but I think you should change that language because it's not actually accurate.
I will.
Okay. And then you also said the next part of that was that they had to go to an institution which the state of Arizona accredits. And so my only question with that was, if you decided to hire a faculty and they went, they had a license from California or went to one of your places in California, are you not going to hire them because they didn't go to a school in Arizona?
No, I certainly would hire them upon understanding that they went to any type of permanent makeup schooling. So I will change that language as well because the state doesn't matter.
Yeah. Okay.
Dr. Lecter, there are two hands that are raised, both Keith and AJ. So is Seamus out?
All right, just Keith.
All right, Keith.
Hi, Dr. Leck. The issue that the state board has is there is a national association for microblading. They do call themselves an accreditor. It's the same issues that we dealt with the Yoga Teacher Alliance, where they call themselves an accreditor. I reached out to them, and they basically told me, too bad, we're allowed to. So some states, it's kind of like a Better Business Bureau, where they accredit companies, and they're called accreditors. This National Association does do this, and they do help approve states, allow those schools to say that they're a part of an accreditor, even though it's not the higher ed that we see. So I just kind of wanted to make that it's something that we can't do anything about. We've tried to reach out to them to say, can you change it so it's not accredited, but they won't. But anyway, I just wanted you to kind of know that the dialogue and where a lot of these schools are. Like with Precision, they were the first school that really in the last 6 months that when we sent a bunch of letters out to a bunch of schools that were operating because this association actually tells schools you don't have to be licensed. You just have to have your program approved by us and you're good to go. So that's where the huge disconnect is with a lot of these schools in Arizona. So anyway, just wanted you to know that commentary. Thank you.
Good to know. Good to know. And in her faculty requirements, so if that's not, I don't think that's what she meant. So. I don't know, just revisit it, make sure it's really what you want, because that's interesting and scary all at the same time.
I agree.
So then one other thing I noticed, but I think you've resolved this, was your catalog states that students can reach out to, and it says your instructor, Camille. So my only concern was if a student was taught by Heather, you know, it says that you are the instructor. So then what would those students reach out to Heather? So if you're saying that you're actually the only instructor, then my question maybe goes back to Keith of listing someone else as a faculty who's not teaching is on the materials. Do you want that or do you not want that or does it matter?
Could you clarify, Dr. Leck?
There is someone else who's listed as faculty on the materials, and Camille's saying that Camille's going to be the only faculty. She's got an assistant, right? But she's the only faculty. So if that other person isn't teaching, we have a faculty form for them, I think. So we don't really need that then.
Yeah, we get a resume form. We don't. We have the institutions keep those. So. If she's the only instructor, we're good. If she has an extra one, then she may want to have that instructor fill out the resume form and just keep it on. They can keep it on file in case there's an issue later.
Okay. Okay. And then my last thing was probably for board slash Camille. The courses are so short, they're 1 or 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. And so the refund policy is broken up down into percentages. And so when we do this, is that broken down by hour? Like, how do you do
Yes. So even though, the group course that's 3 days, it would be a total of 24 hours. So the percentage would just be based off of the hours.
Okay. So, and that's typical. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Making sure that we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
And that is the questions that I have.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Board members. Oh, I defer.
Yeah. Thanks. Camille, I know you didn't submit any marketing materials, so I don't have any questions around that. Just more of a little guidance. As we have had other schools that have come forward with this type of training, and it happens in a very short duration of time, and there is a lot of enthusiasm around microblading, understandably, and what the potential earnings are associated with that. So we like to give that guidance to our schools that please, as you put your marketing materials together and you start to promote awareness of the opportunity, that you want to keep what we call that puffery out of the marketing materials, to not set any unrealistic expectations for a potential student. That's the type of stuff that can ultimately land you back with us in a complaints committee type of scenario. And I do feel like there's probably a tendency, just because of how competitive this market is becoming and how hot this market is becoming, that you just express as much caution as you can in regards to that. And if you were to reference any type of earning potential or employment potential, you should always be referencing some type of third party. It can't just be word of mouth from maybe a couple of your students or something of that nature. Does that make sense?
It completely makes sense. And before, when I was teaching, I actually never liked to use that type of material with marketing because I don't think it's realistic. I started my business from the ground up, and I know how much it took as an investment for me. And so it's unrealistic to say that you can, make 6 figures working 2 days a week. It just wouldn't happen. So I would never market my courses in that way because it is unrealistic. And I agree with you.
We appreciate that piece of it. I have no further questions.
Okay.
I'm not hearing any more. So, Dr. Leck, would you like to make a motion?
Sure. I will make a motion to approve the conditional non-accredited degree program license application with the stipulation that a $15,000 surety bond is maintained.
Second.
So, Wallace seconds. Camille, do you agree to the stipulations?
Yes, I do.
Very good. Ms. Kurz, would you take the roll call?
Of course. Mr. Mike Romano, your vote?
Aye.
Mr. Glenn Tharp, your vote?
Aye.
Mr. Doug Ball, your vote?
Aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck, your vote?
Aye.
And Mr. Scott Wallace?
Aye.
Wonderful. With 5 ayes, the motion passes with the approved license.
Congratulations, Camille. We appreciate your time.
I appreciate all of you.
Well, please continue to use this as a resource as necessary as well. So thank you and have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
We will now move on to our last school under initial applications, Richmond-Dale College. And our board lead is Mr. Wallace. And Dr. Leck, are you at this point leaving the meeting, just for record? You are on mute, Dr. Leck.
I will leave the meeting so as not to interrupt you.
Goodbye, Dr. Leck.
Never an interruption. Thank you, Dr. Leck. Have a wonderful day.
And Mr. Chair, I did confirm with Dr. Leck that she had no additional questions for Richmond-Dale.
Thank you, Mr. Mountain. With that, I will turn it over to Mr. Wallace, as the board lead.
Thank you. Is Mr. Chan here? Or who's here representing the college?
Hi, yeah, I am Rolito Nino Chan Jr. I'm representing Richmond Hill College.
Okay, do you have any opening comments or background information you'd like to provide to us?
Well, yeah, this is our first application, and we are actually operating a K-12 school in the UAE and the Philippines. So we are also offering master's degrees and doctoral degrees here, in the UAE, from different schools in the Philippines. So we thought that it would be, you know, better for us to open our own school. So that's why we applied our own college in the U.S.
Okay, I have a number of questions. You submitted a lot of material, and I'm hoping we can get through a lot of it and get to a position where we can make a motion, an appropriate motion. Let me understand that since 2017, you've operated K through 12 schools in the UAE and the Philippines, and I'm just confirming that.
Yes.
And so why open up a college here in Arizona or the U.S.?
Okay, based on the value, of course, in the U.S., especially in the Philippines and here in the UAE, there are multiple nationalities here from different, of course, countries. So it is preferred to, you know, they prefer colleges from the U.S. and Europe. Okay, so especially right now, we, based on our experience, we are offering colleges in the Philippines, and we got some questions about offering, you know, credentials from the U.S. and Europe. So that's why we opt to open in the U.S.
Okay.
Because that's preferred.
When I look through your material, your tuition, for example.
Right.
And you have some comparisons in there to a large number of other schools. It's dramatically lower. You know, at the same time, your compensation to your instructors is likely dramatically lower than a U.S. instructor. Can you comment on that in terms of how you...
Mr. Wallace, you froze up. Would you repeat that question?
Oh,
yeah, please. Froze up.
I apologize. Let's just focus on one issue. It was a compound question, and that's not fair. Your tuition is about $6,000 approximately for a bachelor's degree. When
right.
you do that in comparison to several dozen other schools that you have in your material, it's dramatically lower. Can you comment on that in terms of your ability to deliver a quality education?
Okay. Based on our marketing plan, we found one school, University of the People, that is offering $4,000, which is actually lower than ours. However, of course, we set it at $6,000 because that is like the sweet spot in terms of pricing in the UAE, especially if we want to compete, especially the current situation. So we want to start low because we want to get students for accreditation. That's more important to us than profitability. So basically, we want to enter the market, get some students, offer the service, and then, you know, we can reconsider and revisit those fees once we get accreditation and we can position ourselves.
Okay. At the same time, your cost structure, at least for your faculty, is lower than I would expect that you would have to pay in the U.S. Can you comment on that?
Okay. So based on the cost structure, most of the faculty that we already have, they are actually working with us already. We have been actually, you know, doing these things, especially to support our current operations. So basically, we are hiring them at lower cost because we are just starting, just, you know, to support the college. And again, once we get this going, we can always adjust that and then, you know, to make it to compete. Go ahead, please.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. You said particularly, so please finish.
Yeah, so basically we have to start at lower cost because, you know, the current situation is very hard, and especially based on our discussion with our consultant in the US especially, it is very difficult to enter the market. So in fact, in our forecast, we didn't include, you know, that in our forecast, the US market. So we only included the market in the UAE. We didn't also include the Philippines. So basically, our forecast is only getting students from the UAE. But of course, it's very conservative. So we are expecting more. So hopefully, you know, with this cost structure and the fees, we can get more students, and then we get accredited. That's the time that, you know, we can offer. Restructure ourselves.
So you intend to attract students first from the UAE? Did I understand that correctly?
Well, we will market in the US, but there are some, you know, uncertainties because of course the situation when we start. We do not have accreditation yet, so, you know, our consultant guaranteed that it will be very hard. So what we have to do is to find a way to enter the market, get the accreditation, because the culture in the US is, you know, accreditation is very important. So we will have to do to get students. That's very important in accreditation. That's why we have to find a way to enter the market, get accreditation, and compete.
Okay. Now, you know, at your current schools, how many students are enrolled?
Well, in our schools, we have different situations. Like, for example, in the Philippines, we have face-to-face, and then we also have hybrid, where, you know, students come on specific schedules. And then some are online. So we have different learning methods that they can choose depending on their budget, depending on their availability, their, you know, location, and so on.
Okay. So what's your enrollment? Let me rephrase the question.
Sorry?
What is the enrollment or the number of students that you have, let's say in the 12th grade?
Okay.
How many?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, sorry. So for the 12, grade 12, we have around 20 students. The total is 1,200, actually more than 1,200 students right now. And we are only catering Filipinos. We are not accepting other nationalities. I know that it's, you know, it's different culture because our credentials right now are from the Philippines. And, you know, we are not comfortable because of the culture difference. But once we get the U.S. Approval, then that's the time that we open up for other nationalities.
Okay. All right. And your intention is this is going to be a remote attendance or delivery of education program?
Yeah, it's online mostly.
Okay. And I see that, you know, when you talk about in your SWOT analysis, certainly that being in the U.S., new to the U.S. is a weakness.
Right. It's correct.
And then you identify in your threats some of your competition, University of Phoenix, Arizona State University, problem, and a bunch more. There's formidable competition for you.
Well, yeah, we included them as because they are all online. Yeah.
Okay. So let me go to you know, I studied your business plan, and maybe I misread it, and maybe I don't understand your cost structure real well. But if I go to page 33 of your business plan, you're basically paying, if I understand correctly, your faculty about $14 an hour. You know, to teach undergrad programs. Is that approximately, did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Okay, and I think master's gets a little bit more. And when I looked at the resumes, I didn't look at all of them, Mr. Chan, I looked at them. You know, a lot of them have, you know, degrees and so forth. Are they gonna deliver these online programs from the Philippines or the U.S. or, you know, what's your plan for that?
Okay, we have instructors or faculty from the U.S. We have two right now, and then we also have most of them in the UAE. We also have in the Philippines. So they are in different locations. Basically, they are with us in our offices. So basically, we can control them. So mostly in the UAE, because you know we have a bigger office here in Abu Dhabi and Dubai. Yeah.
Okay. So when I look at your forecast, and this is for the first degree that's listed there, which is I think a BBA degree, your your cost per month for faculty is $2,800. Does that sound familiar to you for the first month of operating?
Yes. That's okay. Right.
And so my confusion is that's about one person.
Right.
Some other okay. Is that one person going to teach the five courses that are listed in the I guess in your catalog, but your other information that you provided?
Right. Oh, okay. No. Basically, we have. It depends on their degrees.
Okay.
Like, for example, based on the forecast that we have, for example, in the line under BBA or Business Administration, the amount that we have here, 2,800, that's one person that will be teaching BBA. And then for BBIT, another person. So each line there is different. Yes. So they are dedicated to those courses only.
Okay. So the person teaches BBA. $2,800.
Right.
That person's going to teach economics, accounting, English composition, all those things? Or how does that work?
No, we have other teachers who can support them. That's why based on what we have there, like, for example, in BBA, we have one, and then in BBIT, we have two. But if you can see our organization structure, we have around 19 or 18 instructors. So basically we have support, because what's happening is that, what will happen is that, we are actually paying them based on an hourly rate. Okay. So that means if they do not have a load, then we will not be paying them. So basically the payment will be based on their loads. Okay. So the 2,800 is just the, estimate. Okay, and that's the agreement that we have, because that's part-time. Okay, so all of these faculty members will be available to support us in different areas. And if you can see their credentials, they are in different fields like psychology. So we have, those masters in psychology and others like mathematics and so on.
I did see that. So the $2,800 is your faculty cost, for the first semester of the BBA program. Is that shared amongst the five teachers or the five subjects, or I'm missing something maybe?
Well, yeah, that basically includes all the teachers that will cover that that specific program. So basically it's not one person, it's a full-time equivalent, because we estimate 5 hours per day for each teacher. So assuming we have students, then we will provide the instructor for that, for the specific class.
Okay.
So yeah, so that's the total 2,800. So that includes, for example, BBE courses, and then the minor courses. So it's based on hours.
Oh, I understand.
Yeah.
And based on your operating history and so forth, you can retain teachers, paying them that amount. That's not going to be an issue.
No, it's not an issue for now, because we have our own employees supporting us, and then we have some support organizations. So later on, when we get a good number of students, then definitely we will have to hire more people. But for now, I think we have more than enough to support our operations.
Okay. Okay. All righty. And then, the basic fees for semester, about $825 for the undergrad program.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. your compilation statement that's in Appendix 15, when you get a chance to look at it, you don't have to pull it up right now.
Okay, all right.
It doesn't meet the standards in the state of Arizona, I can assure you of that. You might want to look into that and consider an alternative source.
All right.
And so these teachers that you have, some of them are U.S.-based and some of them are foreign-based. UAE or the Philippines? Is that a fair statement? Both, yes.
Yes, correct, yes. Both, yes.
Okay. All righty. Okay. So let me ask you about your capital commitment. Are you the owner of the college?
Yes, it is right.
Okay. And you had some information in there, and I did not take the time to convert, you know, what foreign currency to U.S. dollars. Okay. But yeah. Can you tell me what your capital commitment is towards this organization?
I am budgeting $150,000 additional, although I already deposited around $80,000 in the account. So right. Because yeah, so that's $80,000 in there already there in our Rich Middle College account. But I am going to add more, like $150,000 in more investment.
More investment, okay. And you think, and based on your forecast, I see how it works. I'm still struggling, to be honest with you, with your pay structure of your student or your faculty, excuse me. But I understand how that fits into a $6,000, you know, bachelor's degree type program. Those are my basic questions. I've looked at your business plan. It's comprehensive. It's detailed. I don't know that I looked at your catalog, to be honest with my fellow board members, if any of them have had that opportunity. But at this point, I open up to other questions of my fellow board members.
Thank you, Ms. Wallace. I have a couple of questions. I just want to make sure I understand kind of the intent as I've read through some of the materials. I think I'm understanding it as this is all distant education, but you had made just a comment before, pretty much all of it is distant education. I wanted to verify, is it distant, all distance education?
Yes, it is. It's online, right?
All right, and then it seems as though based on this, the genesis of it was people outside the United States having access to an educational institution licensed inside the United States. Is that an accurate statement?
It is an accurate statement, although, of course, we are going to cover the U.S., but it's hard to penetrate the U.S. market because of our situation when we start. So basically, that's our, you know, a backup plan. But eventually, we will compete in the U.S.
Okay. And so for the staff, the board staff, it seems as though the entire student population will not even be in the state of Arizona. I see the intent of the school as trying to be able to secure students from Arizona at some point, but really the majority of the student population will be at least initially outside the U.S. And so I didn't know if we should be almost like they seem to be operating here, but not providing any education here within the state, right? They have a facility, but the facility is purely just an operational facility, no classroom or space or anything like that. So I didn't know how that might adjust things. I see Mr. Blanchard's hands up.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I did a site visit this week, and they do have a physical location, and it's a large area. They probably have 5-6 offices, restaurant. So the online program, from my understanding, will be at that location once the all the build out's done.
And Mr. Chair, as it relates to, there are other institutions that we license in the state of Arizona. Again, because we are a physical presence state, they do have physical presence in Arizona. They do plan on having the administration and components of services that are in Arizona. We do have both institutions that have a fully online presence that recruit for students outside of the state of Arizona and every place else that have a facility here. And we do have one additional international school that we approved a few years back that also is somewhat similar to what Richmondale is requesting.
Okay, thank you. I know it's a little bit of a nuance and we've dealt with it before. Just wanted to try and get some clarity around what that looks like and how that looks. I have no other questions at this time.
Thank you.
Not hearing any other questions from any other board members. Is there a motion?
Yes, I'm going to make a motion for a conditional non-accredited license to operate and open up a Richmondale, subject to a surety bond of $15,000.
And would you like to ask if the licensee would accept that?
Yes, would you accept that? Those conditions?
Yes, accept.
Thank you.
Glenn Thorpe, second.
Any further board discussion? All right, Ms. Curis, if you would take roll.
All right, Mr. Mike Romano, your vote?
Aye.
Mr. Glenn Thorpe, your vote?
Aye.
Mr. Doug Ball, your vote?
Aye.
And Mr. Scott Wallace, your vote?
Aye.
Perfect. With 4 ayes, the motion passes.
Very good.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your preparation and time. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Thanks. Bye.
All right. That concludes our licensing portion of the meeting. We will now have a call to public. Please keep in mind that we ask public to limit their comments to 5 minutes. The board may not discuss or consider or take action at this meeting with anything not appearing on the agenda, but we do welcome comment from the public. So I know we're down to 11 people.
And I know them all.
All right. Well, we will then move on and close that portion as acting chair for today. Make a motion to adjourn this meeting at 1:19 p.m. in the afternoon. This meeting is adjourned.
Great. Thank you all very much.
Great job today. Good job, Mike. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Bye, guys, gals, everybody.
Take care.